Good evening. My name is Paula Reet, Mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 6th of September 2021. Welcome to our visitor in the public gallery and also to everyone watching along at home on live stream via YouTube. It's 5:30pm and I officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website in accordance with council's policy, and I'll ask the acting general manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Aboriginal community. Our attendees tonight are myself, Councillor Paula Reet, Deputy Mayor Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Wass. From our staff we have the Acting General Manager Mr Smee, the Director of Engineering Services Mr Reeve, the Manager of Development Services Ms Tasha Tyler-Moore, the Natural Areas Biodiversity Coordinator Ms Quinn, our Media and Communications Advisor Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Amanda Morton. We do not have any apologies for this evening, except actually we probably should note the General Manager is away today and has tendered his apologies. Moving now to page one, we have the confirmation of minutes, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 17 held on the 16th of August 2021 be confirmed as a true record. Do I have a mover? Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. The workshops held since the last council meeting, we had two workshops, one on the 23rd of August in relation to Kingston Park and Transform Kingston, and last Monday the 30th of August in relation to the Metro Plan. Moving to page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest that they would like to indicate? No, thank you very much.
Could I ask a question regarding the workshops? Or is that not?
You could ask it during the questions without notice. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or vice versa? No, thank you very much. Questions on without notice from the public. Does any member of the public have a question they would like to ask? No, thank you. Questions on notice from the public. We have a number that are there, and for those people who are watching from home, if you wish to submit a question on notice, you can send it to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We have three questions on notice from the public. The first was in relation to the Blackmans Bay skyline from Mrs Rosalie Maynard, and an officer's response from Liz Quinn. Second, in relation to the walking track at Spring Farm from Mr David Bain, and an officer's response from Katrina Stevenson. And a question in relation to the Environmental Fund from Ms Kate Lucas, and an officer's response from Liz Quinn. Turning now to questions without notice from councillors. Do any councillors have a question without notice? Councillor Grace.
I have a couple, if you don't mind. Firstly, Madam Mayor, I've been asked the days. Are you a full-time full-time mayor or part-time? That's one question I have.
I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. Do you mean do I have another job?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do. I work 2 days a week for Cystic Fibrosis Tasmania. I have, it was 3 days a week, and I cut back my hours to incorporate the mayoral job.
Thank you. My other question is, Mayor, do you have a full, fully maintained motor vehicle from the ratepayers? The mayoral car?
I have the mayoral car, yes, as other mayors have.
Is that, following that, is this another new vehicle, or have you taken the vehicle from the previous mayor?
I inherited the previous...
Big pardon?
I inherited the previous mayor's vehicle.
Thank you. These are questions from the public, by the way.
Sure.
You'll get plenty of those in the next 12 months. But I'm just regarding workshops. I'm a little bit stunned to the fact that how many questions you can actually ask at a workshop, seeing I've been pulled up, what, now three times at workshops for asking too many questions. So my purpose, my question is, Mayor, is why don't we go back to the old systems where we have committees, and that enables us to work more and ask more questions.
So thank you for the question, Councillor Grace. For the record, I don't believe that your comments or questions at workshops have been prevented or stymied, and in fact at the last workshop last Monday evening I allowed you about 10 minutes to make some statements and ask questions. I remember it specifically because I wrote it down. It ran from 6:25 to 6:35. What I do attempt to do, as other mayors have done, is during workshops is try and make sure there's an equitable distribution of questions around the table so that every councillor has an opportunity to ask the questions that they would like to. You may recall last Monday that Councillor Midgley had indicated that she had around 7 to 9 questions she wanted to ask, and so what I did was ask her to ask 2 initially so that it could then be shared around the table, and then if there was time left over at the end there would have been the opportunity for additional questions. My recollection was that you then left the workshop at about 6:37 p.m. So there would have been an opportunity for you to come back around to you to ask more questions, but you had left the meeting. In relation to the committee system, the council has previously made a decision to do away with the committee structure that used to exist. My personal opinion is that it was a valuable system. However, other councillors voted to do away with that. But you are most welcome to put up a notice of motion at any time to actually reintroduce the committee system, and I'm sure that councillors would consider that as they feel fit.
Mayor, I understand that, but please be fair that the fact that I left the meeting was when it was almost closed, because I was sitting in my car taking a phone call when yous all came out, so I wouldn't have had any other opportunity. I mean, it's unfortunate.
Is there another question?
Well, the question is, Mayor, the statement you make is possibly not accurate, if I may say so, because a workshop, we're dealing with millions of dollars at the last workshop.
Point of order, Mayor. Meeting procedures, Rule 29, subsection 2. I mean, putting a question, Councillor Grace isn't entitled to give an opinion or make an argument, which I think is exactly what he's doing. I'd ask that you draw his attention to that.
Thank you. I'll uphold that point of order. Councillor Grace, is there a question?
Look, Councillor Street knows everything. Madam Mayor, I wouldn't argue
okay.
with him.
Sorry, thank you. If there's no further question. I will, however, though, answer the question, the statement that you just made, and that was that there wasn't much of the meeting left. There was about 25 minutes of the meeting remaining when you left on Monday night, which would have given you the opportunity to ask further questions. Thank you, Councillor.
I disagree with that, Mayor, because I was sitting in my car and you all left and okay, it's okay, Wassie, don't worry.
Councillor Wass on a point of order.
Yes, he always does.
Yep. Councillor Grace.
Fine.
You have Councillor Grace, you're out of order in accordance with the meeting procedures of this meeting, so I would ask that you please allow questions without notice to continue without further disruption. You have had the opportunity for the last 8 minutes to ask some questions. Councillor Cordova is waiting patiently with his light on, so I will now give the call to Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My questions are about the just the Mayor's diary, if now is an appropriate time to ask questions about the Mayor's diary. A couple of ones. Firstly, I'm interested to know about how the voluntary assisted dying forum with Mike Gaffney went. And then secondly, I'm interested to know about the meeting with Nick Street regarding the hunting field development. And then finally, I'm interested about Margate Primary School.
Okay. So the Voluntary Assisted Dying Forum was held in the first week of August and was attended by about 50 to 60 residents. Some of them are people who had previously been involved in community consultations around the matter, but there were some new faces there. It was run by the Honourable Mike Gaffney, who gave a presentation about the passage of the legislation and what it meant going forward and how it would be rolled out. And he was very delighted with the attendance. And subsequent to that, I have written to all of my fellow mayoral colleagues around the state expressing that it was a very valuable evening and encouraging them to hold similar forums, because I understand only a handful of them at this stage have taken up that opportunity. Sorry, your second question was...
Hunting Field,
yes. So that was a meeting with Nick Street and Matt Jones in relation to the Hunting Field development. We discussed a range of issues in relation to the timing of the development, and there is still a continued feeling amongst the community in Hunting Field that they'd like to see the development not go ahead, unsurprisingly, and a discussion around the impact on local schools of the additional development. And as a result of that meeting, there is a meeting on site between Hunting Field residents and Minister Ferguson and Nick Street sometime, I think it's about 4 weeks away, and then we were going to reconvene following that. And finally, Margate Primary School, that was in relation to just a range of issues in relation to the school, but in particular the principal of the school, who is just actually about to retire from the position, has been on the steering committee and been the driving force behind the Basics Literacy Initiative, and I've been invited and have accepted to join the steering committee of that and be involved, because obviously the early childhood sector is an area that I have a great deal of interest in, particularly as my time during in state government as education minister. And I think they're shortly running another event on Friday the 29th of October. They're running another event at the community hub for people to come along to. The last one, they had about 140 people in attendance, so it was very well received by the community.
That's great. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any further questions without notice? Councillor Westwood. No. Oh, sorry, I didn't. Your light was blocked. Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Westwood.
That was no problem if it had been Councillor Westwood first. I have three questions. The first one is in two parts. In the latest state budget, $100,000 was allocated to Woodbridge for a walkway from the hall to the post office. Did anyone from council apply for this money?
I'm hoping Mr. Reeve or the acting general manager, they're both looking like they'd like to answer that. Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. There certainly was some discussions at the council level in terms of a possible pre-election commitment to some works in that area there, but there wasn't a formal application to actually access those funds to do those particular works there. So I guess our next steps from here will be a great deal of community consultation, because I realise there's different viewpoints in the community about that particular footpath, so that will need to be carefully considered with the community as compared to just going ahead and doing the project as is. So we would have to actually bring them along with us in terms of that journey.
Okay, well, the second part of this question is, since it appears that local residents don't want this path, could the council request the government fund the path at Kettering instead, which has been applied for the last 10 years?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess the grant is quite specific to this particular project here. So I think what we would need to do is at least attempt to try and manage to get the project through as it is listed. And then I guess if that wasn't successful, then we could obviously go back to the state government and say, unfortunately, we don't have general support for that particular project there, and is there any other options to look at utilising those funds for other particular projects?
But particularly the pathway at Kettering.
Noted.
My second question is, there's groups been doing community clean-up and collecting large numbers of the Japanese or northern sea stars in the water off the Kingborough coastline. Will the council allow these Japanese stars to be disposed of at Beretta, please?
Mr. Reeve, we've all looked in your direction.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question. I think I'd have to take that one on notice there in case I gave you misleading information there. I'm not quite sure, but I certainly will provide a response back.
Thank you. And my third question is also to Mr. Reeve. The drains, we've had a couple of heavy downfalls of rain, and the drains opposite Gamala Road in Margate on the Channel Highway have bulrushes now over well over a metre high. I'm wondering if they could be cleaned as part of an ongoing clean-up. And also the drains in Thomas Road in Woodbridge now have gum trees growing in them nearly 2 metres high. Soon we won't be allowed to cut them down because they'll be wider at the trunk than what we're allowed to cut down. So could we have a regular cleaning of the drains, please?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Certainly for any of the council roads there. So for the first one there, I'm not sure whether you're actually referring to the Channel Highway.
Yes, I am referring to the Channel Highway.
Okay, so that would be a state growth road there, but I'm quite happy to actually forward those comments off to State Growth Maintenance Division there for them to have a look at that side of things. For the ones in Thomas Road, happy to put forward a service request.
Thank you. I have photographs if you need them.
That would be wonderful.
Thank you. Are there any further... Oh, sorry, Councillor Westwood and then Councillor Gladright.
Thank you, Mayor. I was wondering if Council could provide an update on whether the State Government has responded to the RFI request for further information in relation to the Huntingfield subdivision.
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the further information has been sent back for the second time. It was insufficient the first time or didn't meet the requirements. We are reviewing those currently, and we expect that we will go to advertising as early as this week, and we will be advertising the application for a 3-week period instead of a 2-week period, which we're able to under the Act, given the complexity of the application and the large volume of reports that need to go with it to allow people enough time to digest it. This approach was recently undertaken as well with the cable car at Hobart City Council, so it's not unprecedented, and we have done it in Kingborough as well previously.
Councillor Gladright, and then Councillor Midgley after her.
I was just wondering if this council has ever considered becoming a city and what the pros and cons are to that.
You've just become my favourite councillor around the table. Funny you should say that. In late 2018, I put up a notice of motion in relation to Kingborough attaining city status because in terms of the number of residents, we certainly well and truly qualify. That notice of motion was debated at the end of January 2019 when unfortunately I was away on leave, so I wasn't able to take part, but my colleagues in all their wisdom voted it down in my absence. The pros and cons, well, it seems kind of ironic to me that we're part of the Greater Hobart City deal when we're not actually a city. I have made further inquiries about that recently. In order to achieve city status, we would actually have to have an elector poll that would coincide with a council election. So the next opportunity would be in October next year. But yes, I'm more than welcome to have that discussion again. Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A question regarding an update on the spring farm track. I note that it's been about 14 months since we passed the motion to progress this work, or for the developer to progress this work, and I'm wondering if you could please have an update.
I can provide an update. As of late this afternoon, we actually received a letter from the developer to indicate that they no longer wished to do the work and they wanted us to do the work. I don't know whether Mr. Smee would like to add anything to that. We literally received the letter about an hour ago. Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Mayor. The status is in... as printed in relation to the question on notice from a member of the public, but the recent information has literally only been received in the last hour, so we haven't had an opportunity to assess the implications of that.
Thank you very much for that. I have a further question regarding my question last meeting regarding the feasibility study, and thanks to Bicycle Network Tasmania, they kept a great record regarding promises for cycling projects. And they said the Liberal Party's biggest promise to date is a commitment to undertake planning for the extension of the Snug to Margate path through to the Huntingfield in the Franklin electorate. This is one of the priorities coming out of the Margate to Huntingfield Channel Highway Study Plan, which was released in September last year. I noted that we have not heard anything in regards to a commitment for that, but perhaps we might be able to write a letter, or can we do some more active follow-up to see if there is any further commitment or if we have anything since the last meeting.
Mr. Reeve, did you want to provide an update, please?
Through you, Mayor. Certainly we've had the discussion at an officer level with members from State Growth there who really can't shed too much more light on it apart from the fact that a lot of the recommendations that sit in the Channel Highway Corridor Study, which was this was one of them, have yet to actually come into play. Based on the fact that at an officer level we're not necessarily getting the answer back, it may make sense to actually then just write a letter that could be from yourself, Mayor, just to get some clarity on whether or not that election commitment is likely to come forth and when.
Great, thank you very much. And I have a follow-up question regarding Councillor Bastone's questions about the wicking beds at Beretta Tip. Just some further, it seemed like quite an expensive amount to build some, what I thought was some example garden beds, perhaps showcase what you can do regarding upcycling, recycling materials to build a garden in your own home. And I'm just wondering about the cost of those and if there was any community involvement or education kind of component in regards to that.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Certainly we did check the market there just to see whether we could actually get some more competitive quotes for actually doing it. Unfortunately, that was cost for providing that particular facility there. The discussion was, it's been sort of ongoing for the last 6 to 12 months, so it was discussed at the board there to suggest that this would be an excellent way of providing some education to people who are accessing through that site there, as to what can or can't be done in terms of that space there. What we're intending to do with it is to actually add some more to it in terms of running some education sessions as well at the same time there, so using the actual facility as well, not just having it there. So that sort of forms part of the whole process as well at the same time.
Thank you.
Councillor Grace, do you have another question?
Yeah, I do. Sorry about that. I forgot about it. Mayor, as you're aware, I took a code of conduct against all councillors here, and I believe now you've got the decision that the code of conduct panel refused it. My question is, Mayor, this will not stop at that. I would ask and seek under our council policy, which councillors' insurance policy, that's individual councillors' policy that council take out for councillors. I would like to know whether under that policy I'm entitled to legal support. I know the Act says different, but what's the council... I guess I'm asking two questions, Mayor, and I need to clarify this if you give me the opportunity that...
You've asked the question, so I'll ask Mr. Smee to answer it. You've asked a question about the insurance and legal support.
Through you, Mayor, I don't believe that there is, under our policy, a provision for you to be able to claim the costs of legal assistance.
My second question then, I guess, Mayor, what actually does this insurance policy cover, councillors?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, it may be best to take that question on notice, and our finance manager who deals with our insurance policies can provide full details.
Councillor Bastone.
I'm sorry, I asked a question on notice which hasn't been printed in the agenda. So I would just like to very quickly go over it because it was going to be printed and I haven't got a copy of it. I asked about the black posts that are at Pearson's Park at Tinderbox. What are they for? And also, how much did they cost to put in?
That is in the agenda. I read it. It is in there.
Yep. It's not. It's not in some of them. That's what I'm getting
at. Oh, it's in the electronic one, but not in the printed ones. Okay.
Yep.
Our apologies. We will...
Yeah.
So what do you want?
So I know how much they cost.
Oh, sorry. We'll get you a copy of the...
Thank you.
Yeah. I think it was $518. There you go. Yeah. I knew I'd read that somewhere. Are there no further questions without notice from councillors? Otherwise, we will move on. Thank you. Moving to page four, questions on notice from councillors. There was a question in relation to the Woodbridge Hall and budgeted costs from Councillor Bastone, with an officer's response from Mr. Reeve. A further question from Councillor Bastone in relation to the environmental study on beach at Dens Point, with an officer's response from Mr. Reeve. There was a question from Councillor Fox in relation to the Howden interchange, with an officer's response from Mr. Reeve. There's a question from Councillor Gladewright in relation to a pedestrian crossing at Beach Road, Kingston, and an officer's response from Ms. Clark. A question from Councillor Minchley in relation to the Margate to Kingston feasibility study, with an officer's response from Mr. Reeve. A question in relation to the KWS report from Councillor Minchley, with an officer's response also from Mr. Reeve. A question from Councillor Gladewright in relation to the Kettering Recreation Walkway Plan, and an officer's response from Mr. Smee. A question from Councillor Bastone in relation to the Wicking Gardens at Beretta, and an officer's response from David Reeve. And a further question, Councillor Bastone, and an officer's response from Nicholas Alexander in relation to Pearson's Park in Tinderbox. With that, the open session of Council adjourns and the Planning Authority commences at 5:57 p.m. So moving to page 9, Officers Report to Planning Authority, it's DA 2021-299, Development Application for Change of Use from Residential to Visitor Accommodation at 19 Jetty Road, Birches Bay, with a recommendation on page 15. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Mover in Councillor Grace, seconder in Councillor Bastone. Councillor Grace.
I don't need to add much to the report. It's just a recommendation on change of use. I think it explains everything and the approval by staff.
Thank you. Any further comments? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of questions. The first one is related to noise, 2.5.3, in regards to the a note about the noise travelling from the property to adjoining properties. And the response was that it's not considered the change of use or impact on adjoining residential amenity of the area. My question is around how do we measure the noise? I just note sometimes on a still night, say where I live in Howden, noise travels quite far, and then other nights it's not. But I'm just wondering, yeah, how do we actually measure that noise? Because it sometimes can be actually quite an impact.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. Noise can be measured with respect to nuisance, which we deal with under our bylaws and under other environmental legislation that we deal with. The consideration of this application, because it's a single house, not a mass visitor accommodation development, we would anticipate that the noise is no different from a normal house. And as everyone knows, you can have noisy houses, but we don't think that it's of a scale that's going to be unreasonable. Yes, there may be noise, but there may be noise if it was just a dwelling as well. If it did become a problem, got reported to us, we would investigate and visit the site at different times, at different intervals, and we do have noise measuring devices to do that.
Thank you. A point around the impact on wildlife. The point around that the proposed... Oh, sorry, this is a different one. I'm so sorry. My notes weren't very good. It's all good, that's my question.
That's all right. Thank you. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. I note that one of the representations is regarding the smoke taint, and then in the recommendations at 2.4, it says the use and development must be managed so that the amenity of the area is not detrimentally impacted upon... through any of the following, and then it lists it B, smell, fume, smoke. I was just wondering how that's enforceable.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we would do that as a reactive. If somebody's made a complaint, we would go and investigate, right. And that may mean that we need to go out of hours at certain times to observe that, or we may ask the residents if they're able to support their concern with photos of smell is obviously difficult, but if they've got some way of recording it so that we have something to... look into, then we can do so.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? No. Councillor Grace, did you want to close debate? Thank you. So the recommendation as printed on page 15 is for approval with six conditions. It was moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 21, to DA 305 of 2021, a development application for Northwest Bay River Multi-User Trail Stage 1 at Huon Highway Sandfly to Riverdale Road Sandfly, with a recommendation on page 38.
So moved.
I have a mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. This is the proposal for a 2.5-kilometre-long multi-use trail for walking, cycling and horse riding, known as Stage 1, between the Huon Highway at Sandfly to Riverdale Road at Sandfly. And Stage 1 forms part of a longer-distance multi-use trail proposed between Longley and Margate along the North West Bay River. Tracks and trails like this one are associated with a range of benefits from increased health and well-being, increased physical activity, sustainable transport options, tourism and economic opportunities. And in this particular case, as you can see from a very comprehensive report, that it does comply, this proposal complies with all the relevant aspects of the planning scheme, the various zones and codes, rural resource, environmental management, building and works in the waterway and coastal protection area, etc. And anyone that has... So I think there's a whole lot of benefits that we'll see from this proposal. But, of course, anyone that has walked along a popular hiking trail can also... It might be aware of the risks of degradation to the environmental values of those areas that can be produced by high numbers of walkers in a fragile environment. And what we're looking at here with the North West Bay River is indeed a fragile environment, and it is really one of Kingborough's incredible natural assets. It's our largest river system, it's a really important environmental area, and it protects an enormous array of incredibly important species, biodiversity, flora and fauna. So for me, the importance of this particular proposal and why I'm so proud to be moving it tonight is that it provides an opportunity, it will provide an opportunity for residents and visitors alike to be awed, inspired and recharged by nature. I think we all need that, and I think we all benefit from it. And this development application is compliant with those relevant aspects of the scheme, but putting aside the fact that this proposal is compliant, it's absolutely paramount to me that this proposal protects the natural values of the area, including the six vegetation communities along the river and the riparian zones. So I've got a few questions that might help elucidate that. Is it possible for somebody to briefly explain the kind of protections that will take place for the environment with this proposal?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the planning permit, if issued, includes a condition for the construction management plan. That's obviously just for during construction, so that we have the details and accountability for what will occur, and we will review that. If we think that there's issues with the heavy machinery and the like, then we have the ability to address that. Going forward, protection of the environment, that would be up to the assets management team to deal with that and look at that, and I suspect that they would probably work with the environmental team to do that. The planning permit is more for the construction of it and development of it, and it doesn't necessarily have ongoing maintenance rules, but if they did want to extend or widen or change the design that wasn't compliant with the planning permit, then they may need to come back to planning to get approval for that variation. And therefore we would have the opportunity to ask for further environmental assessments.
Thank you. And so am I right in assuming that there's particular stipulations around heavy vehicle movement in and around those areas, or heavy machinery use? I think you mentioned something like that in the report.
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the condition of the permit does ask for the details about the machinery, and yes, commentary is in the report under the response to the representations, and I think in other parts about that heavy machinery. We don't stipulate it in absolute detail in the condition because it becomes too difficult to navigate around. If there's a particular piece of machinery or something, we would need to look at it on an as-case basis.
Thank you. A couple of just areas of interest. Page 31, my question is about the log. So on page 31, one of the dot points there says that there's a large log with a 300mm hollow facing the stream downstream in the vicinity of the proposed bridge. It's considered that the log is unstable and likely to move downstream further during the next flooding event. And so the final bridge location will, where possible, avoid this log and minimise impacts on native vegetation. I just wonder if there's any more detail around... my question is, I guess, what other sites, I assume, were looked at for that bridge. So it's just a question about the context around that log.
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor. I am not aware of the other sites that were considered. That may have been considered by the engineering team that put the application together, what they considered. We just assessed what was before us, and the supporting reports for that, the location of that. I don't know further specifics about the log other than what's contained in the report, and the details of the construction, the location of the bridge will be in the plans.
Thank you. One last question about some environmental concerns. In terms of the wedge-tailed eagles, it stipulates clearly that the work is going to be done outside of breeding time. But then on page 35, it says to ensure, there's a dot point there that says, to ensure in-stream natural habitat will not be impacted by the proposal, river crossings will utilise natural riverbed rock surface. No in-stream vegetation or habitat will be disturbed. And here's the important bit. A bridge will be installed over Cook Rivulet to prevent any impacts. The bridge will be lifted into position using a helicopter. And my question is just about, so I realise that the work is going to be conducted outside of when it might be a threat to the wedge-tailed eagles, but are there any other environmental concerns associated with the use of a bridge, the use of a helicopter to do a bridge rather than a bridge to do a helicopter?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Not a question I've anticipated. I don't know the answer. I'd be guessing. I could also guess that it might upset a few animals. It's something that we need to look at, as it is a council project, whether that is the best method. And I don't think they would select the use of a helicopter lightly, because I don't think they come cheaply, just a guess. So perhaps it's something our engineering department, who are managing the project, could look at and ensure that they are taking the best steps to protect the natural environment.
Thank you very much. Just to conclude my remarks, Mayor, to say that the North West Bay River is our largest river system in Kingborough, and it's such an amazing, beautiful natural asset, and it protects a wealth of biodiversity. This proposal, I believe, is sensitive to those environmental values, and I think will be a great asset to provide for the community and visitors to Kingborough for the years to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone, you had your light on next, and then Councillor Grace.
I did, thank you. I just have a couple of questions. One is on the car parking, that we are not providing any extra car parking, and part of the reason is that there's public car parking available at the junction of the Huon Highway and Sandfly Road. To my knowledge, that car park is always full with park and ride. Could Mrs. Tyler Moore comment on this?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, that's a question that would need to go to Council, not the Planning Authority, to answer about the parking provisions. We just had to assess the application that's before us, and the passive recreation doesn't trigger the need for the additional parking, so that would be up to Council to decide whether they want to put more car parking in for recreational uses or not.
Thank you. My next question, I've read through this fairly carefully. Nowhere does it say how wide the bridge is going to be. It's 8 metres long, but actually how wide is it? Because horses are actually quite wide animals, and the thought of a bicyclist coming along and meeting a horse coming the other way, I'm just wondering the actual width of the bridge.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, I would have to take some time to look at the plans, because we didn't include all the detailed plans in the drawings. I can do it, unless Mr. Reeve knows the width. No? It's something I can look up.
Perhaps we might go to another question and come back to that one, if that's okay, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Grace.
I think it's a very good project, but again, when you build these sorts of walkways, you have to use machinery, cost effective nowadays. Just using labour would be beyond reach, one would think. It will be a continuation on at a future stage to deal with the walkway continuing right down to North West Bay Bridge at Margate. Is that the proposal?
Ms. Tyler Moore. No, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, that is correct. This is stage one of what we see to be a multi-stage project that ultimately gets you all the way through to Margate, yes.
And can I say, Councillor Cordover has mentioned one thing, and a very important thing. The North West Bay River has a massive, massive history, and a lot of councillors may not know that, because back in the 1960s, the only water supply for Margate and Snug was actually through that North West Bay. Mr. Smee has mentioned we've obtained the pump station, the old pump station, further down from this, and the weir, which I believe is a great asset. But the only issue that I would raise is the fact that toilets, we talk about all the environment, so where's everyone going to use the toilets? Up against a gum tree or around the back of a gum tree? Where are they going to be provided with a reasonable location to a toilet facility?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. The intent, and this also partly answers Councillor Bastone's question, is that there is a access to this track from the Sandfly Oval. At that oval there is both parking and a public toilet. There's also a public toilet at the Sandfly Hall, but for anyone wanting to access the track from the Margate, from the Longley end. There is car parking available during the week at the Oval, and as I said, there's also a public toilet there.
Yeah, because that raises another question, Mayor. Why would they want to use the park and ride? Wouldn't that be marked strictly park and ride at the intersection where they're doing up now? I thought that's the purpose of that car park, was just for park and ride.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I guess we're starting to get outside of questions relating to planning, but that is my understanding, that that car parking provided as part of the upgrade of that junction is intended to be park and ride, which would mean that that car parking would be available for use on a weekend. There may be additional opportunities to develop further car parking there in consultation with State Growth.
And I ask then, why is it outside the planning guideline when that is specifically designed for park and ride? And then we come along, if it was a developer outside our council, with all due respects, Mayor, they would have to provide to council sufficient car parking, if you understand where I'm coming from.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, as indicated by Ms. Tyler Moore, the scheme does not provide a requirement for car parking in what is passive recreation, and I'm sure I'll be corrected if I'm wrong on that.
Okay, any further contributions?
I have one more question, sorry.
Oh, sorry, Councillor Cordover.
Feel free to tell me if this is not a planning matter. Will dogs be prohibited from being on the track?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, not a planning matter. It's a matter that Council will need to consider as a matter of policy, and we'd need to do that through our dog management policy, and that would require an assessment of environmental values and, you know, whether dogs are likely to be detrimental to those environmental values.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I have mentioned this before, but I do want to go back over the history of this particular project. I am aware that in the late 80s there was a committee set up, and it was of community members, and this particular project has got at least a 30-year history. There has been a catchment management plan, which was the first in Tasmania, which was commissioned by those residents. I've walked most of the length of this river, and I've visited it on a number of occasions with council staff. And just looking at this development application, I think the environmental sensitivities that are very present and very, very valuable in this area have been very carefully considered, and I do support the recommendation. I think it's an amazing opportunity for council to have this fantastic recreational opportunity in our community, and I would like to thank everyone involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Wass, and then Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. This trail has been long mooted by the community. We've looked at it as a council. We know that there will be numerous legs which will give access, so it's not a matter of walking the whole distance or riding the whole distance. You are able to use part or all of it. There have been a number of representations, and those representations have been covered by staff in their response, and all issues raised, if they don't meet the acceptable solution, meet the performance criteria, which is pleasing. It will give the opportunity for the community and people outside this particular municipality a reason to come and to walk that. Sure, there's going to be issues that will crop up from time to time. There always is. There are issues on the Alum Cliffs track. There's been issues on the Collery track. None of those have been or we've been able to overcome those. So, yes, there are issues, but it is much needed, and as a council we spoke about it previously, and I think from memory we were very excited. So I support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Walsh. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I also support this proposal. Just one question about condition number 9, which says coarse woody debris must not be removed from the site. There is some vegetation removal required to construct the pathway. Why do we need that condition in here, and what does it mean when it refers to coarse woody debris?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, it's referring to logs and the like that are lying around, which we obviously know are habitat for a number of species, reptiles and other small species, and also obviously a habitat area for the food which they eat, including insects and the like. So for the vegetation they need to obviously that is being removed is likely to be removed. It's just saying don't go make it all smooth and cleared away and take away those important environmental assets.
Thank you. Ms Tyler Moore, before we finalise this, did you have a response to Councillor Bastone's question about the width of the bridge?
Yes, I do, Mayor. The width of the bridge on the plans is shown as 1.8 metres. I should say that the planning scheme doesn't ask about width of horses or to consider the width of horses, or it doesn't have a minimum for that. That would be up to the design team as to what they deemed was suitable for that. It's a very short bridge, I'd notice, so I wouldn't think it unlikely that people couldn't negotiate if they saw a horse, because it's unlikely they're going to miss a horse.
Councillor Bastow. She seeks to differ, I think.
That's very narrow for a horse, and there are sides on the bridge, is that not right?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through me, yes, there are handrails on the bridge.
Can you tell me how high the sides of the bridge are?
Yes.
Approximately will do.
Yes. They're 1.1 metres.
Right. Okay.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? If not, I will put the recommendation, which is printed on page 38, is recommended for approval. It has 12 conditions. It was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. With that, the Planning Authority adjourns and the open session of Council resumes at 6:21 p.m. As the next item is a notice of motion on page 49 that has been submitted by myself, I'll hand over to the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, to take that through.
Thank you, Mayor. And we have before us a notice of motion submitted by Councillor Reet regarding significant tree register policy. Councillor Reet.
Thank you. I need a seconder.
Councillor Fox, thank you.
Thank you. I brought this motion before us tonight because it was obvious during the community discussions about the removal of the tree bylaws that there was a great deal of interest in the listing of trees on the significant tree register. And so when I looked into it, we've all become aware now that the policy had actually expired in September last year, so it is overdue for renewal. I believe it's now appropriate that we have a review of that policy, but also importantly the procedures that are associated with it. I think that, and the resources as well, because we do know that there are some a number of nominations that date back a few years that are currently waiting to be assessed under the policy. And I think that we really need to get those dealt with and have a decision made. My understanding is there are around 30 trees that have been nominated for listing that are awaiting a decision, and there are 5 trees that have been nominated for delisting which are awaiting a decision as well. There was no call for nominations to the register put out last year because of COVID, and we haven't this year for a couple of of reasons. One is because of the backlog that does exist. We'd like to deal with those as well. But we thought in light of the fact we're going back out to consultation soon, we hope, with the new tree bylaw, it would cause a lot of confusion amongst the community if we were to call for further nominations at this stage. But I understand the urgency around this, and so I have asked that staff are able to do that policy review and have it back to us within 8 weeks. So I'm told that that is an achievable deadline so that we can have a policy and procedures moving forward. So I move that motion and ask for councillors to support it, please.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Grace.
Well, firstly, have we got a costing on what this thing is going to cost, or is it an open chequebook?
From my reading, the notice of motion is that a review is undertaken by staff. There may be a cost associated with staff undertaking that, but I don't believe that's been costed at this point in time.
It should be costed if we're undertaking such a significant change. If we go back when I was on the council, many councillors will note that we did have a document relating to significant trees. I think it was done by Daniel Gray, if I remember rightly. I've still got that book at home somewhere. Most councillors will remember that. Through our planning procedures, dealing with planning issues, it's been mentioned probably several times about significant trees, and then we found out later that those trees had no significance, if you know what I mean. So my interest in this is to really, the cost of, if you're going to do it where it becomes a significant bylaw, it's going to cost. Who's going to do it? Who's qualified in our staff to be able to undertake this project?
Thank you for the question, Councillor Grace. Ms Tyler Moore, do you have an answer to that?
Yes, through you, Deputy Mayor. The cost would be zero. The policy review would be undertaken in-house, as we do with all our policies. There's no need for any expert advice on it because it's only the policy, so it's to do with the procedure. It's not about a call or assessment of the trees per se. It's fairly straightforward. It's probably worth noting that that it's agreed by staff that the policy should be revised because it was originally written when we didn't have the planning scheme component. You'd mentioned the planning scheme. So there's a big duplication because you actually have to do a planning scheme amendment, which means that you're having to do multiple advertising and get consents and all these sorts of steps. And it's just because it was written before we had that mechanism in the planning scheme, so it's a duplication. So it would certainly simplify but not take away any of the benefits of having the policy.
I don't understand it fully because legislation today is legislation. We had our solicitor come and talk to us about a different issue but regarding trees, and he gave us one opinion. Now we're going out for another opinion. I'm just wondering what's going to happen with this. Is this another hop-trot decision rather than thinking it out, because it has to be a bylaw.
Councillor Midgley with a point of order.
I'm not sure if it can be a point of order, but I think Councillor Grace is talking about a completely different matter to what's being raised.
That's correct. Councillor Grace, we're talking about a notice of motion put forward by Councillor Reid regarding the significant tree register policy. We're not talking about the issue of the bylaws.
No, that may be so, but my concern is we can look at it. It says here a report to this effect to be provided to council within a time frame proposal. So, okay, I'll accept that report will come back to council without any decision, if you know what I mean, because I am concerned about what I've raised, and whether you like it or not. But anyway, I'll leave it.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox.
Thank you. I guess Councillor Grace, when he mentioned Daniel Gray, reminded me of the fact that there was a time when we were concerned about heritage trees, which was mostly European trees. But I think now Council's focusing more on native trees and significant native trees. And I think that's what this particular motion would relate to. But I would like to know if Ms Quinn could answer the question whether we are in fact able to protect non-native trees under this new, would we be able to under this significant tree register policy?
Ms Quinn, are you able to answer Councillor Fox's question, please?
Yes, through you, Deputy Mayor. Yeah, the significant tree policy in the first place was put there to equally protect native and non-native trees, so it doesn't bias one way or the other. And in fact, it actually, because we had at the time mechanisms to protect native trees, i.e. through the bylaw, the significant tree register did have a focus on non-native, but as it's written, it sits completely unbiased. If the tree meets the criteria, then it can be nominated for listing. So it is useful for both.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I thank Councillor Reet for bringing this important motion to Council. It was a great surprise, and it's really fantastic to see an interest that you have in trees, and also an interest that you have. Sorry. And I guess also, you know, listening to the community and noting that it was raised during the bylaw discussions, and also finding out that this policy was due for an upgrade in September, which is a little bit worrying considering it was September and it's now September. Sorry, was it September last year? It was September last year and it's September this year. So it sort of raised the point of going, oh, that's a great pickup that Councillor Reet has done in regards to that. And the next comment, it's absolutely no reflection on staff, because I know this area has been completely under-resourced over the years, and I'm aware from chatting to staff over my time at council that it has been something that is important to them, but it just is not resourced. But people who have been in contact with staff and have perhaps nominated some significant tree significant trees have, from their experience, noticed that it isn't resourced to date, but it is being promoted as a plank in council's overall environmental policy. So they're, you know, residents are really hoping that that we can have a thorough look at it, because it is really important for our growing area. And again, some of the matters that have been raised in the bylaw, we know that it's important to give protection to trees that enrich our neighbourhoods, their beauty, the joy and the interest they bring to neighbourhoods, and the home for many animals, and the shade and the history and everything like that. So it is really important. I really look forward to seeing this report, and look forward to hearing about how we can resource this for the future. So a question again just around the policy and it being lapsed. How do we ensure that perhaps this doesn't happen, or why wasn't it looked at, being reviewed? What was the barriers in that case? I'd be interested to know.
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, it has lapsed. It is on a list of a lot of the work that we're doing in planning, and it is not for want of not doing it. It came with coincided with the nominations that we called prior to COVID, before we had the big peak, because COVID didn't bring us relief, it brought us more work, because it did conclude before that, and we were hoping to get it up. But we noted that the policy needed reviewing as well, but we wanted to resolve those policy requirements. We were concerned slightly with the potential criticism of the public that we may, if we were changing the policy, was to try and avoid work, you know, if someone didn't like a nomination or something, that we had gone and changed it. But we will provide good dialogue around that in the report that comes forward. With respect to policies generally, there is a register which has all our council policies written on it. we go through those regularly and are reminded of the need to update those policies. This one also got delayed when there was the talk about the bylaw change, because if you read the policy, it references the bylaw several times in the policy, so it was put on hold because we obviously didn't know what was going to happen with that. And we, upon review in the last week or so, we actually think we can just completely remove reference to the bylaw anyway, so it won't matter that we haven't got to the final resolution of where council is intending to go with the new bylaw policy.
Great, thanks so much for that history.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'm going to start with a question about considering the many, many important large hollow-bearing trees in the municipality, probably thousands, I would guess, to what reason do we attribute the fact that there's this very small number of trees on our register and the paucity of use of the register? I think we have about 23 trees on our register, whereas for comparison Hobart has 420. So why is that we were underusing the register so far?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. In the time that I've been here, we've advertised for the significant trees. We've had actually very little response from the public. In fact, most of the nominations that are on the list from the last round came from staff, because staff are obviously passionate about the trees as well. I believe that a lot of the trees nominated in the Hobart City Council, and I'm happy to be corrected, relate to non-native species, so not there for the hollow values, because obviously they have a very strong, well, they have a whole heritage team, which would be lovely. And so they have the ability to pick up a lot of that historic and the planting particular trees for certain times, or that accompanied homesteads and things like that. So that's why their numbers are higher. Could we do better? Perhaps we could. It'll come down to resourcing and how we manage that and how we encourage it. It's also worth noting that even though the nominations haven't been called for, it's very clear on our website, should people know to look for it, obviously, that people can nominate at any time of the year, and we're always happy to spend time with people about that. But yes, we could do more, we could list more or advertise it more, but it'll need to be resourced, because it's that community engagement or consultation is very resource hungry.
Thank you. Through you, Deputy Mayor, I'll just make my contribution, which is that, and it was very informed by that helpful contribution then, it's really important that we protect significant trees, not just for their environmental value, but also for their cultural and heritage value. And just reading Hobart City Council's, under their street tree strategy, which I'll come to in a second, they say that the purpose of their code is to recognise and protect trees that are significant for their aesthetics, for their size, species, cultural values and or contribution to the streetscape, townscape or public amenity. And it's not just individual trees, it could be trees as part of a larger group. So, for example, those 45 London Plane trees in Fitzroy Place down in Sandy Bay, they're a significant grouping of trees. And so there's, I think, areas within our significant tree policy where we should actually be leaning into that much more heavily than we have, about widening the scope of what counts as a significant tree and including things for both natural and cultural and heritage values as well. So the main thrust of what I'm going to say is that this needs to be considered as part of a broader strategy when it comes to trees. So any street tree strategy, for example, policies must be in a framework that cover protection, management, planning and species selection, removal and replacement, community engagement. So I think what we're looking at here is one very important aspect, and I'm going to support it because, of course, you know, the tree policy has expired for over a year, so it's really important that we fix this hole. But also we need to actually recognise that the significant trees, the policy itself needs to fall within a street tree strategy and a broader strategic framework. So it can't just be a piecemeal approach when it comes to protecting trees. We need to have a big, broad plan for what we're doing with trees in Kingborough, because one of the main reasons why so many people keep moving to Kingborough is because it's lovely, because it's a great place to live and grow up and work, and a huge, enormous aspect of that is this vegetated backdrop that we have, both the remnant native forest, but also the way that we have trees in our urban built environment. So I am going to support this, but I just really want to reiterate the fact that we need to have this as part of a broader context of a street tree strategy for Kingborough, and that will help inform our decisions. But I'd really like to see a significant tree policy really ramped up and used so that we don't have 23 trees on the register, we have thousands. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova, for your contribution. Councillor Grace, you have a question.
Question. Did I hear from Mr. Tyler Moore that once you start to review this, is this going out to full public consultation?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, no, it won't go out for public consultation. It's an internal policy. It's not legislated. It's also not a gap, unlike the bylaws, which are, if they expire, they expire. This is just a review date that Council's invented to be able to keep reviewing them, which is a good system. So, no, it won't go out to full public consultation, but it will come before a Council meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler Moore. I'll hand over to Councillor Reet now to close debate.
Thank you, and I thank fellow councillors for their contributions on this. I look forward to coming back in a couple of months' time and seeing a renewed policy for our approval. Thank you.
Thank you. The recommendation is that a review of the significant tree register policy and procedures be undertaken by staff and a report provided back to council within the next 8 weeks. That was brought to us by Councillor Reet and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Those against? We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. We have Councillors Cordova, Wass, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone, Westwood and Reet. And against, we have Councillor Grace. The notice of motion is carried. And with that, I will hand over the chair to our Mayor, Councillor Reet.
Thank you very much, Councillor Westwood. We move now to page 49. No, we don't. We move to page 50. Petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period at the time the agenda was compiled. No petitions had been received. Just Councillor Grace left the meeting at 6:40 p.m. Page 51, officers report to council the food truck policy revision. Do I have a mover and a seconder? There is a recommendation on page 55. Councillor Midgley, seconder. Councillor Westwood. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, staff, for working on the food truck policy. I know it came to council a couple of council meetings ago, and they've considered some of the discussions and have revised some of the things. And just a note for the public, when the policy was first implemented, 8 vendors applied for a permit, and in the 2021 financial year, 19 vendors applied for a permit. The policy aims to ensure community amenity, protection of established food businesses and sound environmental practices whilst also supporting mobile food businesses. During the past 2 years, vendors and potential applicants have provided comment on the policy, and the public and local business owners have also contacted council with inquiries and requests regarding the program. All the feedback has been taken into consideration in the preparation of this revised policy. And I'd also like to thank staff during the debate and last time the policy actually came to us. I raised the discussion of phasing out the single-use plastics, which has happened in other food truck policies around other municipalities. And thank you very much that it's included as a single-use phase-out of single-use plastics by January 2022. And I note, yeah, that's increasingly, you go to many takeaway or get takeaway from businesses across Kingborough, and we can see the phase out of single-use plastic, so it's great to see that we are thinking aspirationally and in line with actually what current business owners and food trucks are doing. So I look forward to the debate and seeing if there's anything that we need to pick up and our growing community enjoying food trucks.
Thank you. I had Councillor Westwood, then Street, then Fox. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I have some questions around the finance. For Kingborough, we have an option of 12, 6 and 3 month food permits. Why are we, why have we decided to have a 6 month permit when other jurisdictions or other local government areas only have a 12 and a 3 month option?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. It's mainly based on feedback that we've got over the last couple of years we've been running the particular policy we've actually got there. So we noticed that some do only want to trade for those shorter periods, for that three-month period, and I guess cashing in those quite lucrative months, if you like. Some are quite happy to trade for those 12 months as well, but we have had some that still wanted to trade for 6 months. So it's just about giving options more than anything.
Thank you, that makes sense. The second question is, and I know that this was approved as part of the fees and charges when we passed the budget, but we seem to be quite substantially less than Hobart, Clarence, Launceston and Burnie. A 12-month permit is $1,058 in Kingborough. Hobart, it's $2,606. Sorry, not Clarence. Launceston, $2,175. Burnie, $1,584. Is there any reason why we've priced ourselves like that?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess it was a little bit suck and see, bearing in mind that we actually brought the policy in place there, as I said, a couple of years ago. We did look at the fees that other councillors were actually charging, so it does vary across the board there. So you've mentioned some of the ones which are high, but there's also ones which are also low as well at the same time. So we've tried to strike a balance somewhere in betwixt and between, bearing in mind that we are trying to encourage it, the use of food trucks within the municipality there for the overall amenity for the community. So it is subject to review each year. So if we believe we need to actually alter that in a future financial year, then we obviously can through our fees and charges.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Street, and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor, and I thank staff for the revised report. When this report last came to Council, when the updated report last came to Council, I raised concerns around the Osborne Esplanade approved location. Those concerns, for my part, still remain. And I should say that this is distinct from the Christopher Johnson Park location, which is at the Dog Beach end of Kingston Beach. I'm only talking specifically about the Osborne Esplanade location on Kingston Beach, almost opposite Victoria Street. My concern around that particular area continues to be, one, its proximity to residential dwellings, which, unlike pretty much all of the other approved locations, even Blowhole Road has greater distance between residential dwellings and the location of, and the pre-approved location. Unlike those other locations, it is in very close proximity to residential dwellings, which I think is not appropriate. I also don't think that its proximity to other bricks and mortar retail businesses on Kingston Beach is appropriate. And I also have concerns about its location on Kingston Beach, where parking is already at a premium for our most popular beach and probably one of the most popular beaches in southern Tasmania, if not the most popular beach in southern Tasmania, to be potentially taken up during the day by a food truck. So like I say, I don't have any concerns about the other Kingston Beach location. I do, but I understand that I'm certainly not going to see support for the removal of that location. The balance proposition that I put is that we do get rid of that Osborne Esplanade Kingston Beach location for those reasons. And I would move an amendment, Mayor, that potentially the following words be added to the recommended motion, being with the removal of site number 2 under food truck trading locations, if there was a seconder for that motion.
Are you moving that as an amendment, or are you
moving that as an amendment?
You don't want to ask the mover and seconder first if they would like to.
Well, if they're agreeable to that amendment, then
Councillor Midgley, as the mover, is indicating her agreement. Councillor Westwood, as the seconder.
Sorry, Councillor Street.
Well, then I move that amendment.
Thank you. Sorry, Councillor Fox.
I have very similar sentiments to Councillor Street, and I would like to second the amendment, but I would also like to include Lowhall Road in that amendment for the same reasons that similar reasons which I would like to discuss when it's my turn to speak.
Councillor Street.
I'm not sure at this stage, Mayor, whether I share those sentiments. So what I would... Can we take them one by one?
Sure.
All right. Well, so, I will second it then, and on condition that I'll put another amendment.
Okay. So, Councillor Street, for the purpose of Mrs Morton, could we have your amendment, please?
The following words be added, with the removal of Site 2 under food truck trading locations.
Thank you. So it's moved by Councillor Street, the amendment, seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Street, did you want to say anything further on that?
Mayor, I think I've stated my case and my substantive contribution.
Councillor Fox, did you want to, as a seconder, did you want to speak for the amendment?
Yes, very similar reasons. I have great concerns, particularly on page 54, section 6.5. It says there are no maximum decibel limits specified in the regulations for this type of equipment, in other words, for generators. And I think we have had residents approach us from this area to say that they are driven insane just about by the constant noise, and we are allowing that to happen for 4 hours under this new bylaw, and I'm very concerned about that. I think if this was to be going on for the next 2 years and on a daily basis, and from between the hours of 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. on weekdays, and 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturdays, and 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sundays, for 4 hours out of those hours that I just mentioned, I think it's unacceptable. Also, it's right next to a very popular beach. People on the beach don't want to listen to a generator right behind them, which is less than 50 metres from the actual sandy part of the beach where they would be enjoying the beach for swimming or for just taking their kayaks out or generally recreating in the beach on the sand. I feel the beach is a public reserve, as is the blowhole, which that's why I combine them, or I would in my mind. They are places where people want to come and relax and talk to each other and enjoy each other's company. It's not just about having a food truck there behind them constantly reminding them that they can buy ice creams or take away food. It would be better if they went to the local shops and enjoyed them in both cases and went for a little walk. I don't think that these locations are appropriate for a food truck. And for those reasons, I would support the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further speakers on the amendment? Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. This hasn't gone out for consultation, has it?
Yes.
It has?
Several times.
This actual review that we're looking at?
Yes.
And were there any representations?
Yeah, quite a bit of feedback.
Is it in here? Why am I not seeing it?
I think it was in the previous iteration of this, because this came back. We considered this back in June. Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So it hasn't formally gone out to representations here. I mean, I guess we've gathered a lot of representations through the period we've been operating the policy there. So, and we've tried to relate some of those within this report here. So, for example, for the one that was mentioned about noise there, we've sort of made some comments about that to say, for the information we've actually received back about that, there's only been one complaint, and that was when they were operating out of ours. That's a formal complaint to council. So there may be some anecdotal complaints about noise, but we haven't actually received them formally. So the policy itself has been operating for a number of years, and it's been out, if you like, in that public arena for a number of years as well at the same time. This policy here is a revision of that policy, so obviously it needs to be adopted by council before it formally finds its way into the public arena. Mm-hmm. But it is fairly similar to the last policy. There's just been a couple of changes there, and the main changes there, which is sort of being debated at the moment, is actually a change from moving from areas that we won't allow food vans and putting the onus back on areas where we will allow food vans. And that's been put in place there, mainly just from the experience we've actually had over the last couple of years or so with the operation of the food vans. So, mm-hmm. So I guess it certainly has been out in the arena, public arena there. There certainly has been opportunities and comments that have been made back from the public about various aspects of it as well at the same time there. So generally, fairly positive feedback.
So I'm just considering the Osborne Esplanade amendment. Am I allowed to ask Councillor Street, if he's aware of various complaints? And that's, like, I'm just wondering if you've got any community support for that concept of not having food vans in Osborne Esplanade.
Councillor Street.
I'm happy to respond on the basis that my recollection is that we received at least one email from a surrounding resident opposite that area, mm. Who was very concerned about the continued use of that area. And personally, I've had several conversations with traders on Kingston Beach who are concerned as business owners about the impact that that site would have on them as well.
Right. Because personally, I think food trucks add quite a lot of atmosphere and vibe and, good kind of positive vibes for the area. So I'm still wondering whether I support this amendment or not, so I'll have a listen to what others have to say.
Councillor Westwood, then Councillor Grace, then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I don't support this amendment. I do have sympathy for the residents that may be impacted by noise from generators, but I think, generally speaking, the amenity that the food trucks bring, the different options they bring, beachgoers, the vibrancy that they bring to that beachfront strip is valuable. I note on page 69 that Osborne Esplanade, the trading hours are slightly different, 9 till 6, with one site food truck limit. And I think that means that the different food trucks will move on. I assume they have different types of generators. Some of them are louder than others. I generally support that food trucks bring different options and diversity for people who are willing to buy food when they're at the beach.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Grace and then Councillor Cordova.
Mayor, I'd remind councillors, and correct me whether I'm wrong or not, the Councillor Street's moved amendments before and we've had to rescind them. I need to be mindful of the fact that there was a court case here.
Point of order, I don't think Councillor Grace's reference to rescinding amendments moved by Councillor Street is relevant to the debate.
Well, okay, but it's a fact. Look, what I'm trying to say then, I guess it's, Deputy Mayor, it's like anything I say is like putting water on a duck's back.
Point of order, Councillor Grace, that's not relevant to the...
Okay.
Sorry. Council's out of control, because what I want to say...
Okay, can we just all take a breath for a moment? No, just wait. Yes, you are. Just wait a moment. If we could just go forward in orderly fashion. Do you have a question you wish to ask on the amendment, Councillor Grace? Because if you continue to make allegations against your fellow councillors, there will be a continued interruption of points of order. So if you could please stick to the amendment that we are currently discussing, it would be appreciated. Could you put your microphone on, please?
The question is Councillor Street's amendment, is it legal?
Yes, it is.
Right, because my second question is, as we all know, we had an issue with a coffee van, as Councillor Street knows, down on the Esplanade that... Now, look.
It's all right, continue, Councillor Grace.
I've lost a train of thought because councillors are talking, not giving me the opportunity. So I just ask you to be mindful of the recent court case regarding a coffee van. It was located on a private property on the Esplanade.
Sorry, I'm not clear what your point is, Councillor Grace.
Well, my point is how can you remove not having a coffee van in the Esplanade when the judge, correct me whether I'm wrong, but the judge ruled the only reason he breached the council bylaw was the fact because it was on private property. The coffee van was registered... with council.
Okay, Councillor Grace, I appreciate your contribution. However, right. We are way off the topic of the amendment. You're talking about an entirely different matter, which you can bring up at another stage if you like. But
I'm talking about Mayor being consistent as council.
Okay.
I won't question you any further. I can't support that, so that's fine.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Briefly, I certainly have a lot of sympathy for the representatives who raised their concerns around the Osborne Esplanade, also around all the other sites there. I just do note also that it says that, please note that in terms of parking, please note that these sites are not reserved for food trucks. They're public spaces and may only be used by food trucks if appropriate parking spaces within the mapped areas are available. I note that Site 2, Osborne Esplanade, is... as the Deputy Mayor alluded to, it's one food truck trading one day per week, is my understanding, from 9 till 6. Am I correct? Yep. And similarly, with Site 6, it's trading up to 3 days per week. There is a balance here that needs to be struck, and obviously I would want a situation where those generators don't produce the amount of noise that they clearly do, and if it's disruptive, I think that's a shame, and I have enormous sympathy for the people who are affected by that. The countervailing force there is that it adds, as Councillor Glaidwright alluded to, a certain vibrancy and choice for the consumer and a greater variety of offerings that this municipality provides. And so, of course, I'm torn in that respect. I think that this is an area that could potentially be mediated by having a really good look at what happens after this... after this passes, so I won't be supporting Councillor Street's amendment on this occasion. I think this is part of these policies are reviewed on a regular basis, and we can adopt and improve where we need to. So on this occasion, I think that for me, having more choice is better. And so whilst I have sympathy for those representatives who are not going to like this decision, I'm going to vote against Councillor Street's amendment. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, you had your light on.
Thank you, Mayor. I do have my light on. Just to double check, currently at Osborne Esplanade, are the food trucks allowed?
So under the current policy, it was three trading days. So it has been revised down under this policy that we have before us.
Thank you. Sorry, I knew there was a change. I just wanted to double check it. And I absolutely support food trucks regarding the vibrancy, place-based activation and having more food choice.
I do know some evenings when you're there in summer, you wait 2 hours for a pizza, and that's quite a long time when you have hungry people with you. So having a food truck would be great, but I also note there are some nights that you go there and it's a bit of a ghost town, and the local food places are, you know, they don't have that many customers. So it is definitely variable. And over the summer months, I think it would be great to have choice. So I'm wondering at all, and perhaps, I don't know if Councillor Street's had any conversations or if staff have thought about the fact that perhaps over the quieter periods that there isn't a food truck, but over the summer periods, perhaps in that particular place for Osborne Esplanade, that we allow the food truck to be there. Would that perhaps be a consideration to perhaps mediate some of the local food vendors and things like that?
Mr. Reeve, is that something that is workable within the policy?
Through you, Mayor, I guess anything's workable through the policy there. I guess it's just a question of what council wishes to do in this case. So it's really more of a council decision as compared to an officer's consideration there. So if there was going to be with some restrictions, seasonal restrictions there, very much like there's restrictions on days of operation and hours of operation there, then we'll just adhere to whatever those policy requirements actually are.
So there is scope, if you did want to put up an amendment, depending on what happens with this amendment, and there is do with that advice what you wish to after we've considered this amendment. And I have on the list Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Wass.
I have a question and then a suggestion.
Another amendment. Excellent.
Yeah, I thought so. It's one food truck each day. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. Could Councillor Street amend his motion that these trucks did not have food vendor trucks there during the time it was not daylight savings? So we had the trucks during daylight savings hours.
Sorry, I don't quite.
All right. In summer.
You want them there in summer.
I want them there in summer. But if we tied it to daylight savings, remove them under the food food trading locations in Eastern Standard Time, which is the non-daylight saving time.
All right. Okay. Councillor Street, are you agreeable to that amendment to your amendment? No? Okay. All right. We can come back to that if you'd like to put that as an amendment. Councillor Wass, I'll go to you.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to cover just a couple of points first before I talk to the amendment. I want to cover them because we can't go on endless amendments, because the next one will be the final one. I am concerned about generator noise, which really hasn't been addressed in the report. I think that is very much appropriate for residential areas. We should not have a person trying to put their kids down, trying to put their grandchildren down, trying to put their own head down and have a generator outside regardless of the time. The other aspect, and I've said when we first discussed it, I'm not happy with the 200 metres. I believe it should be further, and 250 metres, I believe, is the absolute minimum. Speaking for the amendment, I totally agree. In fact, you'll recall I had a question without notice 6-7 months ago in relation to the distance that a food van could park away from stores, retail outlets in Kingston Beach, and that was because the Kingston Beach retailers were losing business. And when you look at how much it's going to cost a food van for a 12-month permit, $1,058, doesn't go anywhere near the rates that we get from a retailer. And a retailer generally employs people, not just him or herself or a couple. They are providing a service 52 weeks a year, whereas a food van is not. A food van will come and go. Now, that's not to say that I don't support food vans. However, the food vans can't have the cream Otherwise, you might as well tell the retailers, just close your business because we want food vans. And I don't believe we do. It's nice to have some of that change in food, if you like, but I don't believe it's something that the community want week in, week out. We have to think of our existing traders. They're the ones that pay rates. They're the ones that pay their staff wages. They're the ones that open 365 days a week, whereas the food van, here today, gone tomorrow. The other part in relation to the 250 metres, if I can just cover very quickly, if you look at some of the other spots, we're even at Drew Point, we're going to be competing with ourselves by allowing a food van in. So perhaps we close that little kiosk and just rely on a food van once, twice, three times a week, and we'll call it quits. But I do totally agree with Councillor Street, and I think this amendment is an absolute necessity.
Thank you. Councillor Grace, do you have a question?
Yeah, a question on Councillor Wass's statement. What's the difference then between, can I use this as an example, the IGA Snug building when this council approved that development next to a supermarket within 50 metres or less? So we've got to be consistent. If you're talking about...
Okay, sorry, I'll answer your question. Because what you're referring to is the consideration of a development application, where those things such as competition are not a consideration under the planning scheme. But what we're talking about this evening is a council policy in relation to allowing food trucks to operate in certain areas. For my contribution, before I ask Councillor Street if he wants to sum up his contribution about the amendments. Look, I, having listened to the conversation around the table, I have some sympathy for this amendment, but I would actually prefer to see some of the foreshadowed amendments that would look at a compromise situation in relation to perhaps daylight savings time or the summer period, however it might be defined. I would be open to that because I think that would be a good compromise. Like others who have spoken, I can see the merits of the arguments both against food trucks because of the impact on the trade of restaurants, but I can see the benefit they also bring to sections of the community with choice and vibrancy and the other comments that have been made about what they do add to an area. So I would like to see that there's a compromise, and I will not support this amendment, but I would be very open to somebody putting up a further amendment if this one is lost. So Councillor Street, back over to you.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, in summing up, I'd like to thank the vast majority of my colleagues for the positive and constructive way in which they contributed to that debate. The things that I would say are these. I don't think the local residents, in terms of the impact upon them, much differentiate between the period of daylight savings and the period of not. I think the potential for nuisance is there regardless of the time of the year, and probably greater, in fact, during the summer months than it is during the winter months, purely because of the numbers of people who are already at the beach. And I think Councillor Wass also makes an excellent point regarding letting food truck vendors in to take the cream, as it were, during the summer months. I understand all the arguments about vibrancy and the increase in freedom of choice. Believe me, I really do. All for it. What I would say is, even if we get rid of this area on the basis that it's not really appropriate, there are still going to be, at this stage, six other places where these food trucks can go, and innumerable places where they can go if they come to us with an alternative trading location that staff think is appropriate. So I think there are places where we could add real life and vibrancy to Kingborough and real value to our community without cannibalising existing retail areas. And, I mean, at the end of the day, we don't owe food truck vendors
a right to use our public streets. They're our public streets and we choose how they're used. So while I'm all for freedom of choice and giving people as many options as we can, I think we're well within our rights to regulate where we think that's appropriate, and that's why I've moved the amendment that I moved.
Thank you, Councillor Street. I'll now put the amendment. The amendment, as moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Fox, is that the attached revised draft food truck policy 4.1.2 be approved with the removal of Site 2 under food truck trading locations. All those in favour of the amendment, say against? We'll have a division. All those in favour, raise your hands. In favour is Councillor Wass, Midgley, Fox and Street. Against, Councillor Cordova, Grace, Gladewright, Bastone, Westwood and Reet. The amendment is lost. We are back on the substantive motion as printed in the agenda. Well, it's already been moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Westwood. I think Councillor Fox, you are next on the list to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. I also agree with the vibrancy that these food trucks provide and the choice, and I think it's wonderful to see them in areas which are a bit isolated from the shops and away from the busy areas, but also maximising the choices for people who come during the summer to our wonderful beaches. My main concern about this whole process is the fact that there is no maximum level of sound for these generators and how they impact on the houses. And I note that some of these places are less than 50 metres from the food trucks, for example, the houses in Osborne Esplanade, and also at Blowhole at Blackmans Bay. And knowing that that is right next to where the Mary Knoll development is going to go, with a large number of houses. So it's in a valley, it's going to be travelling quite loudly to those residents that aren't yet built, but they will be soon. And between those residents and the food truck is also a creek which has got a very nice reserve, and there's just a new land care group forming that's going to look after the vegetation where the swift parrots are in that creek and in that council reserve, the Mary Knoll Reserve. Now, people do come by the busload to look at the blowhole and go to that reserve, and they also walk the entire length of Blackmans Bay Beach, and then that's a natural turnaround for them. But to have a generator sitting there with maximum decibel limits, no limits on the decibels, really concerns me. And I understand from the report that council is reluctant to have any noise controls other than the environmental management and pollution control noise regulations in relation to these food vans. If we could come up with a compromise where we could say, well, we could have food trucks there but they're not allowed to have a generator, or they've got to have a generator that is not audible from the nearby residences, then I would support this motion. But otherwise, I'm not going to support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Fox.
Is there a possibility? Could I ask that question?
Sure.
Is there such a possibility?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess it's a bit of a difficult question to answer. In terms of a generator, a typical generator, maybe 50 to 60 decibels or so, which is a bit like a dishwasher or a vacuum cleaner, if you were about the distance of a residence away from a typical generator they'd use in a food truck. So in terms of actually saying, could you actually make it possible to have no noise? Well, probably not in a residential area. It would be very difficult, I'd imagine. In terms of actually not using a generator, then the only option then would be to have powered sites, but of course that comes at an extra cost and an extra obligation potentially for council and an extra difficulty in terms of actually looking after that as well at the same time. So it's probably not the answer you're actually looking for, but it's probably about the best I could actually give.
Councillor Fox, your light's not on yet.
Sorry, I just turned it off.
You're right.
There is a powered site on Osborne Esplanade. Could they be asked to go to that powered site?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I mean, they could be asked to go to a powered site. I mean, the difficulty is would be controlling that as well at the same time then, and how you would actually manage that. It's a possibility, but I'm not quite sure whether that would actually really alleviate some of the concerns that have been raised, particularly with the businesses as well at the same time, bearing in mind that we're also putting in this buffer of 200 metres as well at the same time, so it does need to fit within that sort of criteria as well at the same time.
Thank you. I next had Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move an amendment.
Sure.
To 6.3D... not undertake any food or beverage preparation or cooking outside the permitted vehicle or cart while on site. I'd like the words while on site, because we do know that things like muffins and things for a coffee van are prepared before they go in the van. So I just think that it makes it a little neater and tidier.
Okay, so we're on Councillor Bastone's amendment. Could you just for the purpose, do we have a seconder for that amendment, or do we just want to, how about we repeat it for Mrs. Morton first?
Okay, so 6.3D would read, not undertake any food or beverage preparation or cooking outside the permitted vehicle or cart while on site.
So we're on page 67 and it's, halfway down that
page. Can I ask a question on that?
You will be able to as soon as I get a seconder for it. Do I have a seconder for Councillor Bastone's amendment?
I'm happy to second. Or would the mover and seconder possibly just... It's a very minor thing, I think.
Yeah.
Are the mover and seconder happy with that amendment?
Yes, I'm happy with that amendment.
Excellent. In that case, we will... Are you happy, Councillor Bastone, if we...
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, thank you.
So Councillor Midgley and Westwood are happy with that, so we will incorporate that into the substantive motion. So we... Did you want to say anything else on the substantive motion?
Yes, please.
Continue.
Okay. On 6.1C, I would like C removed. Not trade in a location designated for use as a park and ride between the hours of 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. because I think one of the things about the park and ride while you're waiting for your bus to come, which will be very quick of course, but just in case they're not, it's really nice to be able to grab a cup of coffee. And I think that there might be ways of limiting it, but I would like to see that one totally removed.
Okay, so the proposed amendment at the moment is that 6.1C, which is the paragraph not trade in location designated for use as a park and ride between the hours of 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. be removed. Do I have a seconder for that amendment? Councillor Wass has seconded. Councillor Bastone, did you want to say anything further on that?
Probably not, just that it's nice to be able to grab a coffee, and I think that's the only sort of van that would be there during those times.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak on that amendment? Councillor Grace?
Well, I'd just like to talk on the other one, 6.3D. It says, not undertake any food or beverage preparation or cooking outside the permitted vehicle. I thought that was a permit that that's why you have a van to cook inside the van. So I can't see any point.
Sure. So that has now been put into the substantive motion. The words were added while the vehicle is on site, so that it recognises that somebody may... cook something outside of the van when it's not at its selling location. So it's just tidying up the words around that to make it clear what's intended. Is there any further contribution, Councillor Westwood, on... So we're on, just to be clear, we're on Councillor Bastone's amendment, and that is to remove 6.1C about park and ride.
Thank you. On the face of it, I agree that potentially we should remove 6.1C. However, I would just like some advice from staff about the impact on car parking. So if a van was to park across four or five park and ride spaces, is that possible under this policy if we were to remove that?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess two of the main designated car park and rides we have within the municipality, which are currently under construction, will be Huntingfield and Firstside. There is other smaller ones as well at the same time. They will not be operated by council, but they are certainly put in place with the viewpoint that they are for park and ride, not necessarily for commercial purposes there. So regardless of whether we take this out or not, it would require for those particular car parks to have that discussion with State Growth as to whether or not they'd be willing to actually have a commercial type operation happening in a park and ride facility.
Thank you. So I guess as a follow-up question, why have we included 6.1C, and are there any adverse impacts that we haven't considered with its removal?
Through you, Mayor. So I guess this clause we put in there because there's obviously a possibility that we may look at other park and rides or other car parks as well that might fit within that criteria there. I guess the main viewpoint behind it is that the park and rides are open through those core period hours, if you like, and that's the reason why the dimension's made of 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. It is quite possible and quite normal that DSG would actually, for the two that I've just mentioned before, approve for the area to be used by a commercial business set outside of those hours, because it won't then interfere with the operation of the park and ride. And it may be that we actually elect to put in additional park and rides as well going forward, so that's just a cover off on that.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a tricky one. And am I right in thinking that at Sandfly intersection, for example, even though that's obviously State Growth, it's a State Growth highway, State Growth everything, but I think it's like 11 spaces there. And so a food van, whilst I can see why it would be great to grab a coffee, but I can also see how that would really stuff up the day for like a whole lot of people. Not a whole lot of people, three or four people who would miss out in a place where there's only 11 spots. Firstly, am I correct about that?
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, that's correct. And you're right in terms of the fact it probably has a greater effect on some of the smaller park and rides. For some of the larger ones there, it may or may not be possible to actually put in place there. I guess all I'm saying is a couple of the larger ones that I've actually mentioned there are not actually in council control. They're actually in someone else's control and would need, I guess, some sort of approval for them to actually go and put that in there.
Okay, Councillor Cordova, is there another question?
I'll just finish my contribution by saying that I am completely undecided at this point, so I'm going to be listening to Councillor, because I can really see how it could potentially be tricky. In Sandfly particularly, there's the petrol station right across the road where you can get a coffee. We'd want them to get a coffee there rather than wasting a whole day's worth of parking for three or four people who should be on the bus. So in those smaller ones... And I understand Councillor Street. I welcome the debate because this is a tricky one.
Does anyone have... Councillor Street, on the amendment?
On the amendment, just a question. Regardless of whether we get rid of 6.1C, this would still have to be an alternative trading location that would be assessed by staff against all those criteria in 3 anyway, wouldn't it? So... You're still going to be looking at whether it's a good idea or not, regardless of whether 6.1C is in there or not.
Mr. Reeve.
I'm putting the responsibility on you now.
Yeah. I might just add a bit extra to my response there, only just maybe there'd be some other questions that might be of a similar ilk there. One of the difficulties of putting a policy together is just how specific you get with the policy there. So this one here is probably more specific than I would normally like to see in a policy, and that's why you probably get a lot of this debate that's actually happening as well at the same time. It is nice to get the intention of council and the intention of council as to what they want to actually provide for the community there. And I guess when we sometimes get into these ones there, it does get quite tricky. But unfortunately with this one there, I think we've had to put that detail in there because of the level of interest in some of that detail there. So we have done that. So in terms of what you're actually saying there, yes, the alternative locations will come back to the council officers. They will assess it against everything that's actually in the policy. They will also be looking at making a common sense sort of approach to it all as well at the same time.
Councillor Bastone?
Yes, could I just ask the question, which park and rides at the moment do the council own?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So officially we don't have any. So there's... Oh, sorry, I'll take that back. Denison Street and the ones down the wetlands we have. But we don't... And there's other ones which are used potentially as park and ride. So even the one down at Kingston Beach there, we have a lot of people who park and ride down through there at the moment. So... But the two big ones that are coming up is Huntingfield and Firthside. And then there's a couple of others that are used unofficially as well. I know of one in Margate, and we've already mentioned the one at Sandfly as well at the same time.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I just had a quick look wondering. I wondered if I could bring my coffee onto a Metro bus. You actually
cannot. No, you can't.
Consume food or drink or bring open drinks onto a vehicle.
You can't eat or drink on Metro buses. Any further discussion on the amendment? Just a brief comment from me. I don't support taking this out because I'm concerned that food trucks might turn up before the majority of cars take the spaces, and actually for the reasons that Councillor Midgley has just explained, and if we are to believe the state government, there'll be lots of express buses, so you won't be waiting long enough to get your coffee and then drink it before you get on the bus, because you can't drink it on the bus. So for once I'm putting my faith in the state government there. Those words may come back to haunt me, but I won't support this amendment. So, Councillor Bastone, did you want to sum up the discussion on the amendment? Thank you. I'll put the amendment. It's moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Wass. It's to remove clause 6.1c in the policy. All those in favour? Against? If we could have a show of hands, those in favour of the amendment... Councillor Wass and Councillor Bastone, and those against is Councillors Cordova, Grace, Midgley, Glade Wright, Fox, Street, Westwood and Reet. The motion is convincingly lost, I'm sorry to say, Councillor Bastone. So, with much excitement, we're back onto the substantive motion. And now, just before I come to Councillor Glade Wright, Councillor Westwood, you had your light on for a question because you've given your substantive contribution on the substantive motion.
Thank you. I couldn't remember if I had or not, but I have two questions. In relation to 6.3, Health and Safety, Part H, the question is in relation to compliance. Ensure that any noise related to trade does not constitute a public nuisance and use power sources that generate low or no noise and or air pollution. Given the discussion tonight, how would we undertake compliance with that 6.3H?
Mr Reeve.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess it's the discussion we've actually had with our environmental health officers there in terms of how they would go about this, and generally when they look at these things, they base it on complaints they may receive. As I mentioned in the report there, apart from the one complaint that I think councillors received, I think formally we've only received one complaint about noise there, so we would investigate that, or they would investigate that, or any complaint that's actually made, and then we'll look at it based on its you know, whether it actually has validity or not. So they would then be looking at the nearby food van, what sort of generator they were using, what sort of noise was coming from that, and the proximity to the resident or the complainant that was making the comment.
Thank you. Second question in relation to 6.4 waste. A mobile food vendor must phase out the use of single-use plastics by 1 January 2022. And from this date, ensure that all containers and utensils provided to customers are certified compostable. How will we be communicating that, and will we be ensuring that when we issue a permit for a food van that we're making this very clear that we have a 1 January 2022 date?
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, that would certainly form part of the permit conditions for each of the food trucks there, and it'd also be something that we'd be looking to actually communicate out with the community as well, so they know, I guess, showing council's support for that aspect as well at the same time.
Sorry, just a follow-up question. I guess just because this is a requirement for food vans that we don't have currently on our commercial premises who sell food, just to make sure that it was very clear that we had that differing requirement for food vans, so that they weren't in breach of that policy unknowingly. How would we communicate that?
Mr. Reeve.
So for each food truck, they need to have a permit from council. So within those permit conditions there, that will form part of the conditions there.
So just to clarify, it's not just a long list of conditions like you agree, you tick a box. It would actually be highlighted because it is quite a change.
Correct.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so we're still on the substantial, and Councillor Gladewright hasn't made a contribution yet, and then I think Councillor Midgley you have, but it will be a question, and I will foreshadow that when we eventually do finish this discussion, which I'm not stifling anyone, but there is an incentive of a comfort break following this debate. Mm-hmm. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. I'd like to move a wee amendment,
sure,
please. Sorry.
Point of order. Under the local government meeting procedures, I believe 2 is the maximum.
Really?
Is that correct?
Mayor, point of order.
Okay. Councillor Street.
I think what the meeting procedure actually says is that you may refuse to accept more than 2 motions to amend. It doesn't say that you have to. It says that you may refuse to accept more than 2.
It's possible that the mover and the seconder would accept my...
All right. Let's try that. What's your amendment?
It's just regarding... 6.4b provides separate waste receptacles for waste and recyclables. Given that we're now bringing in the phasing out of the single-use plastics, I would like to see FOGO included in what's required to be provided there.
So can you give me some specific words for that? So to help Mrs. Morton?
Yep. Sure, at 6.4b, provide separate waste receptacles for FOGO waste and recyclables.
So we're inserting the word FOGO into 6.4b after the word for. So provide separate waste receptacles for FOGO waste and recyclables. Or is it FOGO, comma, waste and recyclables?
Well...
Yes, it is. It would have to be. Yes, sorry. FOGO, comma, waste and recyclables, it would read. So 3 bins. Is that what you're intending?
It could be either or.
You have to make a call point.
Yep, go for the three.
Three, okay. Is that acceptable to the mover and seconder of the motion, who I can't recall who they are at this point?
Midgley and Westwood.
No, sorry, it's not.
Not Councillor Westwood, it is Councillor Midgley. Okay, so we'll have to take it as a... I'm happy to take that as an amendment. So the amendment is, as on the screen, insert the word FOGO, comma, so that the sentence at 6.4... B reads, provide separate waste receptacles for FOGO, comma, waste and recyclables, each with a capacity, etc., etc. Did you wish to speak further to the amendment?
Am I allowed a little mini rant?
Yes, you mini being the operative word.
Okay, point of order, who seconded it?
Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. A seconder, Councillor Midgley. Thank you.
Thank you. I think this is one of the issues that I marched into this room right back at the beginning about. So I just wanted to say, if we're making people switch over to compostable packaging, when that compostable packaging goes into a general waste bin and that compostable packaging goes to landfill and becomes anaerobic, it is actually 26 times worse than carbon dioxide, and that's a real problem.
Mm.
So if we're going to be bringing in the compostable packaging, we need to be ensuring that we have the correct bin for that compostable packaging to be going in. Otherwise, we may as well just stick to plastic.
I have... Thank you. Is that...
Mm-hmm. Rant over.
That's okay. did you want a response from Mr. Reeve, or... I'd say from that look, that's probably he can't help you. So in that case, I had Councillor Streeton and Councillor Bastone on the amendment.
Mayor, couldn't agree more with Councillor Glade-Wright. I think if we're going to ask or going to give the service to residences, and we're also, like Councillor Glade-Wright says, going to ask food vendors to use compostable packaging, it makes sense that they also provide the best means to dispose of it. I can't help but think that this is one of those things that you either agree with or you don't. You probably know pretty instinctively, so I'm going to move that the motion be put.
Sure.
As well.
Sure.
What does that mean?
That means that we'll vote on it now.
Oh, well, can I speak against it?
Oh, if you wish to, yes, you can.
That's a point of order, Mayor.
Okay, point of order. Yes, Councillor Watts.
He's already spoken to the meeting.
Beg your pardon, sorry, you can't do it if you've...
He has spoken to the meeting, he's made an amendment, and he cannot put that the motion be now put.
I'm looking at the Acting General Manager.
Do I put it?
No. All right, let's just move on and take Councillor Bastone, because before... By the time we figure out if that's...
Okay. Well, my the reason that I'll speak against it is not because I don't believe in it, but for people who don't get rubbish collection, okay, we don't have FOGO. Now, it's not... Some of the food vans, I know where they live. They live in areas that don't have rubbish collection. So they have to go to Beretta Waste Transfer Station, like all of us, who don't have rubbish collection, and get rid of our recyclables and our waste. There is no provision for us to get rid of FOGO at Beretta. So you are going to handicap the people who have the food vans who don't get rubbish collection at home for FOGO. So I'm just... asking, have some consideration for these people. It's not that I don't believe in it, it's just that they have no way of getting rid of it.
Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you for those facts, Councillor Glade-Wright. I wasn't aware of that 26 times information. I have a question. With the capacity, so this here, 6.4B, provides separate waste receptacles.
Having the same problem I had.
Yeah. Each with a capacity of not less than 50 metres.
Litres.
Litres. I can't speak now. Sorry. Is that... I don't actually quite understand, like, is that What does that mean? Is that a wheelie bin? Because I know our FOGO wheelie bins are $95 per annum. In terms of the cost to the food van for providing a 50-litre separate waste receptacle for FOGO, what would be the impost on that food van?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So 50 litres is slightly smaller than what we use for a household collection. In fact, for FOGO, we're using 240 litres. So that's a much bigger thing, but that's over a longer period of time. The biggest issue will be for the food truck vans there is, to my knowledge, I don't think, bearing in mind they work in a number of different municipalities, and to my knowledge, I'm happy to be corrected, I don't think that's a requirement that other councils have actually put on food truck vans at this stage. So it'll be something very specific to Kingborough. And the main the main cost associated with it will be the actual disposal of the FOGO itself. So the bin itself won't be that expensive for them to actually purchase. It'll be just where do they dispose of the FOGO and the cost associated with that as well. I guess there's also a risk associated with it in terms of, you know, any compliance as to whether they will actually properly dispose of the FOGO. So that's one thing that's actually a little bit hard to control. And I guess the other thing that's worthwhile pointing out to councillors that at the current situation is that if people go to the food truck vans and in some of the locations there, they're not locations that the people purchase their food and sit around in the general location. They tend to move off either in a vehicle or they move further away from that. So the chances of them bringing that particular compostable material back to the location of sale, once again, is outside of control as well at the same time. I certainly think there is a lot of merit in actually looking at it, and I'm all for it as well at the same time, but I think maybe that might come at a later stage there, once we start to get signals from the state government in terms of phasing out single-use plastics across the state as well at the same time, in which case then you might be looking at the options of the public place bins that actually would fulfil that purpose as well at the same time.
Councillor Wass, you've got your light on.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I support the concept, but I think Mr. Reeve has taken all my words that I was going to say, that it's not practical. I mean, you go to a food van, you buy your eats, you buy your drinks, you don't stand there, you walk away. When you get to a rubbish tin, you then throw your rubbish in. And now, unless council is going to put FOGO rubbish bins 50, 100, 200 metres away from food van sites and pick up the tab, it's not going to happen. I have never seen anyone get a cup of coffee and stand by that coffee machine or coffee truck and drink that coffee. Never seen it once. And I must admit, I've never done it. I'm probably 200 metres down the road and I'm sure everyone will be in the same order. As I said, I support the concept, but unless council is going to install FOGO sites throughout the area where the food trucks are going to be, I don't believe I can support this motion, and it's going to be a costly one to council.
Thank you. If there are no further speakers, I'll put the amendment, which is moved by Councillor Gladewright, seconded by Councillor Midgley, that at 6.4b insert the words FOGO, comma, waste and recyclables. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. Sorry, I just know there are several people waiting.
A very quick one. I just in response to Councillor Wass, I take that point. So then why are we making them have waste and recycling then? It's the same thing, right?
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Gladewright. My apologies for overlooking your summation. As I just mentioned, it's moved by Councillor Gladewright, seconded by Councillor Midgley at 6.4b, insert the words FOGO, comma, waste and recyclables. All those in favour, say aye. Aye. Against?
No.
Okay, show of hands required. All those in favour? Councillor Cordova, Midgley, Gladewright, Street and Reet. All those against? OK, Councillor Grace, Wass, Fox, Bastone and Westwood. The motion is lost. We're back on this substantive motion, but I'm not seeing an end in sight, so I'm going to call a 5-minute break because I think we need a slight comfort break before we just... So we'll come back at 5 to 8. So the open session of council reconvened at 7:55 p.m. Now, if I'm not mistaken, we are back on the substantive motion, which was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Westwood. Do I have any further speakers? Yes, Councillor Midgley.
I have a question, Mayor.
Sure.
I have a question. It's in relation to Councillor Fox's points regarding generators. And I had a quick look, I'll get to my question, I had a quick look at other jurisdictions' comments around generators, and had we thought about putting a specific operational volume relating to decibels in the generator comment to perhaps appease the noise of generators?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. We certainly did have that discussion with the environmental health area as to whether it would be appropriate to put a particular figure in there. I guess their viewpoint is that certainly some of these things can change over time as well, and if you start to lock yourself into something like that there, you're better off actually just going with your actual acts that actually provide that information about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate in different areas. So that was, I guess, their viewpoint on it. I also think it gets a little bit tricky when you start to get policies like this, then you get quite specific with some of these things there in terms of actually trying to manage that as well at the same time. So from that perspective there, we've certainly made the comments about how we might go about it in a general fashion, but have not elected to put in a particular decibel level as a maximum.
Thank you. And we have nothing noted regarding music or deliberate sounds to attract customers. We haven't got anything else related to noise, I note, either. And some other food truck policies actually specifically state that.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess that's the whole point of actually having something in there, which is a little bit more general in nature there, because we would treat any complaint that we might get from a resident or anybody else as well at the same time based on its own merits there. So if we thought that it was causing a nuisance of some description there, then we would seek to actually have that nuisance abated.
Thank you. Do I have any further questions, because I think everybody has spoken on the substantive.
I haven't spoken on the substantive.
Oh, beg your pardon, Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to, I'll be very brief, and I'll advise that I'm going to vote against this motion. There are a number of reasons why I want to vote against it. One, we've spoken at noise and we haven't resolved the noise. The most important aspect from my point of view is our existing traders. They are our ratepayers, and we're doing them a total disservice by having food trucks who would be, and this is my guess, 99% from outside our municipality, coming in and taking the cream, fighting the traders that we have, which are our residents and our taxpayers. And I just think that we've got to get it right, and I don't believe it's right, so I will not be voting in favour.
Thank you.
I just the recommendation, because
Councillor
we've got
Grace.
So the recommendation is up the top, isn't it? That the attached revised draft food truck policy 4-5, but that's the one we're voting on.
That is correct, because the amendment was incorporated into the substantive motion. So I will now put that motion as printed on the screen, that the attached revised draft food truck policy 4.12 be approved and include the words, quote, while on site, comma, at the end of clause 6.3D. All those in favour? Against? Could I have a show of hands? All those in favour is Councillors Cordova, Grace, Midgley, Glade Wright, Street, Bastogne, Westwood and Reet. Those against is Councillors Wass, Fox. Is that 10? Yeah. The motion is carried. Thank you. We now move to page 74, to one of my favourite subjects, cat prohibited areas in council reserves, with a recommendation on page 77. I have a mover in Councillor Midgley very enthusiastically. If I could move this from my chair, I would. And a seconder in Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor Reet, and I think you were surprised to know that I did actually own a cat. We had a conversation last week. So
I was very surprised to learn that.
I am not. I like dogs. I like cats. But I don't like cats in the Murrell Reserve. So this is a really important matter that we're considering here, and it's a really fantastic outcome for our very special Peter Murrell Reserve and our wildlife habitat in Kingborough. As the report states, the areas surrounding Peter Murrell are being increasingly developed, and with the hundreds of homes due to be built in close proximity to the reserve over the next 5 years, it is even more important. There are significant endangered species in Peter Murrell, and I thank the community and the community groups for bringing their conversation and notes to council, and the great work and advocacy by council staff regarding this matter. We've been doing some great work in the area of cat management, and this is another important step in regards to this. And it was something that I did actually ask with the hunting field development coming forward, if this could be a consideration. So it's fantastic that it's come before us tonight. And I'm not sure if there's any council staff here tonight that would perhaps like to give perhaps any summary or comment to this. Perhaps, Mayor? Yes. Would any council staff that are here like to give some summary or comment?
I don't know.
Are
there any council staff? Ms Quinn.
Thank you. Most of the substantial work in this area has been done by Kayleen, so speaking on behalf of her. It is very exciting to finally have an ability to do cat management in our council reserves. We've only really been able to do that at Boronia Beach Reserve in the past, but under changes to the Cat Management Act, we've realised now that we can do that in other reserves. So this area was chosen as a priority due to the size of Peter Murrell Reserve, so that council reserves that run along Algona Road, along Coffee Creek and next to Taramus Bullet Hunting Field will be included in this proposal because of their adjacency to Peter Murrell. So we're hoping that if the motion's successful and we can have cat prohibited areas there, we'll be able to monitor for stray and feral cats and then trap if required.
Thank you. And thank you very much, Ms Quinn. So just to be absolutely clear, so for the new development, the proposal for perhaps 500 houses in Huntingfield, they will not be able to own a cat. Is that my correct note?
No, that's not correct. It means that they have to contain the cat on their property so that they don't roam into the cat prohibited areas.
Okay.
So how they do that is up to them. Councillor Grace, then Councillor Westwood.
I'm only going to be quickly on this because I disagree with this because, for a fact, it's going to be too hard. $45,000 to put in the budget when, for an example, use Bruny Island, which is in another part of the report, which I was heavily involved in the cat management from the beginning on Bruny Island. The federal government put $500,000 into Bruny Island. Council put money in, and I guess this is ratepayers' money that's going into Peter Murrell Reserve, etc. And we've got no mechanisms in place on how we're going to deal with this. So I can't support it, because if you look at Bruny Island, over the last 12 months, 14 stray cats. We spent $80,000 building a building over there for 14 cats. So I believe, like most people, I believe that we were working as, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mayor, I thought we were working on a strategy where the state government brought in a policy much the same as the dog policy for cats. And until that happens, Kingborough is not going to control it. I mean, it's just not feasible. And as we know on Bruny Island, there's 21 cameras stolen at a cost of $2,000 each.
Thank you. Just an answer to your question, Councillor Grace. The state government chose in their recent amendments to the Cat Management Act not to have containment of cats as a provision, and so therefore if we want to protect sensitive natural environments within our municipality, we have to do it through cat prohibited areas. There is no additional cost to council because of this, because we already have funding within our budget for the cat management project, which employs our cat management officer, and we have a, as the report indicates, we have a an arrangement with the Ten Lives Cat Centre. That's why we don't need to build a facility here, but we needed one on Bruny Island for the stray cats. We have an arrangement with the Ten Lives Cat Centre where any cats located on in any of these cat prohibited areas can be taken to the Ten Lives Centre. They will be scanned for microchips, and if they have a microchip, they will be reunited with their owners.
Thank you for that speech, but I still don't support it.
That's okay. Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I think this is a great policy. Definitely more of a dog person than a cat person, just FYI. I agree with the key, one of the key points raised during the consultation, that the requirements that apply to dog ownership should also apply to cat ownership. I had a question around 4.2, the Memorandum of Understanding with the Ten Lives Cat Centre. It says the average cost of a cat received by the TLCC is $200, and that this fee is adequately covered by the annual budget allocation for the Kingborough Cat Management Project. If a cat is caught and scanned and returned to its owner, do we charge the owner the $200 like we would if a dog was found and reunited?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, my understanding is that we don't. The $200 fee, I am fairly sure, is around if the cat is found to be stray or feral, then, and is still put down, then that is when the fee would apply. I am fairly sure that that's what the intent of the MOU is about, and so I'm imagining that if the cat is scanned, we could scan it here potentially. It might not even need to go to the Ten Lives Cat Centre. So I don't think the $200 fee would apply in that situation.
Thank you. The annual budget allocation we've noted is, I think, a contribution from council of $45,000 for the 21-22 financial year. Is that the Kingborough Cat Management Project, will that be an ongoing $45,000 annual budget allocation which would cover the $200, or is that intended that it would cease at some point in time?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor, that contribution, as you said before, supports the employment of the cat management officer for 2 days a week, and also has a small operational budget which would cover things like the monitoring equipment we need, trapping equipment we need, as well as the fee for the Ten Lives Cat Centre. So it has been an ongoing budget allocation, but like most budget allocations, they don't have to be ongoing if council doesn't believe that we need a cat management project.
Thank you. And then just to clarify the question by Councillor Midgley about the Huntingfield Reserve and whether you can or can't have a cat if you move into the new subdivision. Could we have some information on that?
Through you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Kim.
that has yet to be decided because it's a matter that will be addressed through the development application that'll come before council. So council staff have been discussing this issue with Communities Tasmania, and they at this point appear favourable that there may be some provisions about cap containment in the new subdivision, but it hasn't been resolved at this point.
Thank you.
Councillor Watts.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll be very brief. I support this recommendation wholeheartedly. The community support the recommendation wholeheartedly, and of course from the community submissions that we've received in relation to this item, the community demonstrated their wholehearted support. I'm well aware that Peterborough Reserve has cats galore in it, and I'm hoping that our actions might spur on Parks and Wildlife Services and or the state government to uphold their end to look after Peterborough Reserve and not leave it to council. But I do support the recommendation.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to say that just because it is difficult, and I acknowledge that it is difficult to enforce cat prohibition areas, does not mean that we shouldn't do it. And in fact, the overwhelming community support, as demonstrated by the feedback that was received, no negative feedback was received by written submission or on Facebook. That just shows that, similar with the trees, the residents of Kingborough really value the natural amenity that we have, and they want to protect it. And for too long now, cats have been causing really significant damage to our biodiversity. And these are just small mechanisms that we have within our power to try and mitigate the ongoing destruction caused by cats. Now, it's important also to acknowledge that cats are part of the family for so many families across Kingborough, and they provide great comfort, and they're part of the family, and so nobody wants to take that away. What we do want to do is try and create a mechanism that protects really important areas. And so within the Kingborough Municipality, Algona Coffee Creek and Huntingfield Reserves are a really important network for wildlife habitat, recreation. They're really important as vegetation buffers, wildlife corridors and creek protection. And because there are so many really significant biodiversity aspects, it's important that we do everything that we can, pull out all stops to make sure that we protect those particularly vulnerable to cats. So with that, I really support this motion, and I'm very proud and pleased to have seconded it, and I want to thank everybody that was involved so much in cat management within Kingborough, because they're doing a fantastic job. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova, as usual, puts it so very well, and I agree with everything he's said. The rangers at the Peterborough Reserve have been removing cats for years, and I know that hundreds of cats have been removed from that area, but they have had a major impact on the native wildlife and the bird life particularly. And I think it's a wonderful thing that we are putting this motion tonight, and I really do recommend it, because I think it's beholden on us to set an example. There are other reserves which might also qualify in the future. And I do own a cat, and I've always owned both dogs and cats. But I contain my cat, and it does work, and it is something that anyone can do. It's not so difficult, and then you enjoy much more wildlife around your property and bird life without worrying about the cats eating them. So I do recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Do I have any further speakers on the motion? I just want to make a brief contribution before I put the motion. Tomorrow is actually a National Threatened Species Day, so it's appropriate that I think that we're considering these cat prohibited areas on the eve of that, and making a contribution as a council and as a community to protecting some of our native mammals and our bird species that we know are found in quite substantial numbers within the Peterborough Reserve. And so it therefore follows that we need to ensure that cats in the areas adjacent to those reserves are contained by their owners. And I'm, as I have been dubbed, the crazy cat lady of council before. I know that, as I said, I am owned by two cats, and I know only too well that if you let them out, they roam, and all cat owners, or all those people owned by cats, are well aware that cats can travel up to 16 kilometres in 24 to 48 hours. And so I do hope that we get to a stage in the future where we have right throughout Tasmania that we have the same provisions applying to containment of cats as we do for dogs, that we have the full gamut available, because I don't think we should discriminate between cats and dogs when it comes to regulations, and given what we know about the danger to our native wildlife from cats that roam. So I hope that in future that we have a state government that might take that that matter seriously. So without any further ado, I will move the motion that is printed. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? I have a show of hands. All those in favour? Councillors Cordova, Wass, Midgley, Glade-Wright, Fox, Street, Bastone, Westwood and Reet. Those against? Councillor Grace. The motion is carried. We move now to page 81 with a recommendation on page 87. It is the Woodbridge Recreation Ground Master Plan 2020 Engagement Activity. I have a mover in Councillor Bastone and a seconder in Councillor Wass. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to present the draft Woodbridge Recreation Ground Master Plan, and with the recommendation the master plan be released for public consultation. This was started in August 2020, and during our last budget session we looked at allocating $385,000 for the 23-24 year. It's quite an extensive change to the oval. It requires total realignment of the oval, a realignment of the access to the oval, some equipment that will be used for adult exercises. I would have liked to have seen it to come to be started earlier than 23-24, because one of the main concerns is the safety issues, and in relation to the current driveway and the parking configurations, particularly for spectators, and there's a large number of children who are watching their siblings play soccer. So one of the things at the moment is that the ground is littered with apple crates trying to keep an area clear for people to walk around. So if at any stage, my hope is that next year or the next budget we look at bringing it forward purely on the user safety grounds. But it is a wonderful ground, and with some money spent on it, it'll be one of the jewels in the crown. So I just hope people support this going out to public consultation.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone, do I have any further speakers? No. Oh, Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I think the master plan looks wonderful, and I support it going out for consultation. I'd like to know what the engagement activity might be, because we have spent a lot of staff time and effort engaging in the Woodbridge area, and I think that's a good thing. There are a number of other competing priorities that I'm aware of that our amazing urban designer and our comms and engagement officer have in terms of competing priorities. So what is envisioned when we say through an engagement activity in accordance with Council's communications and engagement policy?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. So what is proposed is listed in 7.2 in relation to a survey. There is a local community newsletter that operates in Woodbridge being the Barwick Bugle that we would make use of. There's also a Woolwich Community Association, and we would call on the two tenant clubs at the Woodbridge Oval, being the cricket club and the soccer club, to also assist in the dissemination of the draft master plan and in getting the message out that we're interested in feedback in relation to this particular draft.
Thank you for that. It says an amount of $385,000 has been earmarked in the forward estimates. We've already earmarked $250,000 for Silverwater Park. So added together with the $385,000, that's a lot of money to spend in the Woodbridge area. Given the report notes that the Woodbridge School has experienced significant growth in the last 4 years, from 272 students in 2017 to 343 students in 2012, has Council considered approaching the Department of Education for a contribution towards this master plan if it was endorsed by the community?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. The intent of the master plan, and it's been emphasised by both the two clubs, is that they don't expect Council to fully fund all of its implementation. They're obviously hoping that Council will assist, but both those clubs are very active in terms of pursuing grant opportunities. We haven't considered approaching the Education Department, and bearing in mind there is some distance between the school and the Oval, and the school have their own Oval. They do use the Woodbridge Oval for athletic carnivals, and potentially the Education Department may wish to contribute to this particular development. But I would say, given the dislocation between the school and this Oval, we would be unlikely to be successful in that approach.
Thank you. So the next question was about grant funding opportunities. You mentioned the expectation is not that Council would pay for the entire master plan. So the $385,000, is that an estimate of the cost of implementing the master plan, or is that just a portion of the cost?
Through you, Mayor. It's a very high-level estimate in terms of the funding required to implement the master plan. Obviously, once there's more detailed work done, that cost may vary, but at this stage, that is the estimate for implementation.
Thank you. I just have concerns about raising expectations, because we have focused a lot of effort into the Woodbridge area of late, and it's an amazing place, it's an amazing part of our municipality, but our municipality is large and varied, and if we do this for Woodbridge, are we going to do it for every other small area in our municipality, and what expectations are we creating around, first of all, preparing a master plan, consulting on a master plan, and being able to fund upgrades to all of our public open spaces across the municipality. So I support the master plan, and I think Woodbridge is very lucky to have had Paul Donnelly prepare it for them. I just have some reservations around doing this for all of our smaller communities.
Thank you. Councillor Westwood, Councillor Grace, and then Councillor Cordova.
Just a question to Mr. Smee. That's $385,000. That's to upgrade the Oval as well, is it? It's just not for the master plan, surely?
Mr. Smee.
Now, through you, Mayor. So the Oval works are included as part of the master plan.
Yeah, and to be quite frank, I'm astounded that a councillor makes a comment that it's a lot of money to be spent in a small town. Well, what the hell? I mean, Woodbridge is an old settlement. It has a lot of young people. It's a growing town.
Point of order, Councillor Grace. I don't think that's relevant, my comments, to your contribution.
I just thought it was unnecessary, your comments. But anyway.
Okay, let's move on then. Councillor Cordova.
Thanks very much, Mayor. A question about the proposed car park reconfiguration. Is there more detail available about like how many spaces it'll be and what the surface and all that kind of stuff?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, not at this stage. The basic concept is that the car parking and the access to the car parking needs to be set back from the oval. At the moment, you have a crossover to access the site that then brings cars directly through where pedestrian activity is occurring and where cars are parking if they want to park right up to the oval. So the intent is to get that car parking to the back of the site along with a crossover to access the car parking at that point. But this is a high-level concept and more detailed design would need to be done.
Thank you. I would like to take a moment to just recognise that the user safety and the player experience and the spectator experience have all been something that's really been brought up. And that Woodbridge is a delightful area, and I think that the community will really benefit from being able to put in their feedback through our communications and engagement policy and have their say about it. I note that it is a high level plan at this stage, and I'm really looking forward to seeing all of the ideas and input that the community provides. So I'll be supporting this motion. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. If there are no further comments, Councillor Bastone, would you like to close the debate? Thank you. I'll put the motion in relation to Woodbridge Recreation Ground Master Plan 2020 engagement activity, moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 90 to the selection panel for the Kingborough Awards. With a recommendation on page 91. Well, it isn't really a recommendation because it's a blank recommendation to identify any councillors. So, firstly, perhaps before I ask for a mover and a seconder, could I ask for anybody who would like to nominate themselves to be on this selection committee? So, our policy states that the Deputy Mayor is on it already, and then we're looking for three other councillors to be part of this process. Do I have anybody who'd like to be? Councillor Bastone? Anyone else? Councillor Wass? You sure can.
I just want to know if there will be any sort of perceived bias if I put my hand up for this, given that I've written quite a few of these award nominations for various community groups.
No, you would just need to declare anyone that came before us, before the committee, during the process.
Okay.
Yep. So I've got two, so three, okay, all right, great. So the motion then would be that Council appoints the following three councillors to assist the Deputy Mayor in the assessment of candidates for the 2022 Kingborough Awards, and that these councillors ensure their availability to meet in late October for this purpose, and it would be Councillors Wass, Gladewright and Bastone. Could I have a mover for that motion, please? Councillor Midgley and a seconder, and Councillor Cordova. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. The next item on page 92 is the Taruna Neighbourhood Garden Lease with a recommendation on page 94. Do I have a mover for that? Councillor Midgley, yep, and Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley, do you want to speak on that?
Sure. Just to say it's a great initiative, the Taruna Neighbourhood Garden. Many of us have been there for a few of their launches and events, and it's you can't really put a dollar figure on the amount of benefits that place does give to the community, enriches the community. During COVID, they just did some really fantastic things, and so I hope we can all support this motion.
Thank you. Any further contributions? If not, I'll put the motion. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox, as printed on the screen. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Move to page 95, the Kingston Men's Shed lease with a recommendation on page 97. Moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Grace.
I think it's explainable. In the report, I don't think I need to single anything out unless some other councillors have any issues.
Thank you. Any further contributions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to add, I think this, again, is like the other community gardens. It provides such a valuable place for men to meet regarding mental health, wellbeing and social isolation, and also they provide many projects that provide a lot of benefit to many community groups and school children go and visit, and they do some really great projects for the community. So it's great that we can support this one as well.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I do support the recommendation. My question is, have both organisations now their own incorporation, because before they were the one organisation?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, I understand that is their intention to become individually incorporated. I don't know whether they have done that at this point in time, but certainly that was my understanding of their intent.
A further question, Mayor, if I may. Should we wait to sign the lease until they produce their incorporation?
It's just me.
Yes, we can certainly require the incorporation to be in place before the lease is signed.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Did you want to sum up? No. Councillor Fox, sorry, did I just overlook you?
No, I was just hesitating because I feel that there are two motions here and we're dealing with them together, but the next one over the page is for the gardens and the first one is for the men's shed.
Correct.
Yep, okay.
Yep. Okay. So I'll put the motion as moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Gladewright, as printed on the screen. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We move now to the page 98, and it is the Kingston Community Garden lease with a recommendation on page 100. Do I have a mover? Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Once again, this has grown from strength to strength, and I think it's great to see the synergy between the two groups, and I recommend the motion.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Echoing what I sort of said in regards to the other two community gardens and the benefit that provides, I have a question regarding, I mean, if it's not within questioning around this discussion now, I can talk to council staff later, but more in regards to, do we know if all of the Kingston community garden members are sort of based locally? And how do we work with them perhaps from a community development perspective, and what kind of liaisons do we have with the Kingston Community Garden from council?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we haven't been given the details as to the proportion of their membership that are local residents. We could certainly ask for that. I do know over the years that council has engaged with both the community garden and men's shed through our community development staff, but that tends to come and go, that engagement, in terms of what programs are on at the time and when there's opportunities for our programs to connect with theirs.
Thank you. And do we know at all if they're at full capacity for their garden beds? Like in some places there's a wait list for community garden beds.
So I do know, I can answer that one. I do know with the Kingston Community Garden that they are they have some availability, and they are also looking at the moment at upgrading their facilities for accessibility, and also whether they can install some accessible garden beds to enable people with disability to come to the garden. And I'm visiting them on Wednesday morning. So I can ask the question that you've asked about their membership.
Great, thank you.
Any further contributions? Councillor Fox, did you want to sum up? Thank you very much. I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. It's moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 101, the renewal of rate rebate for conservation covenant policy, with a recommendation on page 102. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Fox. And a seconder, Councillor Cordova. Thank you, Councillor Fox.
This is just something that we've done for many years, and I think it's really important to encourage people to look after the land that they can protect their wildlife and vegetation for environmental reasons. It's only a fairly small amount, but it is meaningful to those people, and it does encourage people to look after their local habitats. It's the rebate will be a minimum annual value of $100 and a maximum of $600. So I think that's just for the record, and I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Bastone.
Yes, I just have a question on the on 5.1. The maintenance of the current policy will not have an adverse impact on council's financial position. It obviously will if we're giving, if we're charging less rates to these people. So it will have an impact. I agree that it's a very minor impact, but I think you can't make a statement saying it will not have an adverse impact. Couldn't the Acting General Manager like to comment on that?
I'm sure he would. Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Mayor. I think the point that the author is trying to make is that there are already rebates in place, so maintenance of this policy is not going to change our current financial position. Like, this is an existing policy, we're currently giving a rebate, nothing's going to change in renewing the policy.
Councillor Fox, would you like to close the debate? Thank you. I will put the motion at 17.8, renewal of rate rebate for Conservation Covenant policy, moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We come to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session, being confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, regional contract for recycling and current court matters. Do I have a mover and a seconder? Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried. In accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease, and open session of Council adjourned at 8:36 p.m.